Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to call to order the October 27th Board of Education meeting, which will now come to order. It's November 10th in the year of our Lord, 2014, at 7:30 p.m. We're going to have the Pledge of Allegiance, and I would like everyone to rise and face the flag, and we'll pause 5 or 10 seconds in honor of our veterans and everything they do for us. So just a moment of silence, please, before we start the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, Mrs. Stecker, roll call, please.
Mrs. Wilkinson, present. Mr. Elster. Ms. Wojcicki.
Here.
Nelson.
Here.
Mr. Ellis.
Here.
Mr. Escalante.
Here.
Mr. Kenwood.
Here. Okay, folks, welcome to the meeting. We're going to start with public participation. I'd like to remind members of the audience that speakers should identify themselves, complete a public participation form, and limit your comments to 3 minutes or less. If your comments have substantially been reflected in others, we would ask, in the interest of time, that you please forego making them, and that you provide the board with any copies of written material that you may have. Personal complaints and criticisms about staff members, students, or other members of District 41 community should be initiated privately with the appropriate district representative. Also, profanity, interruption, and other interference with the orderly conduct of the meeting are not permitted. All questions raised will be forwarded to the District 41 staff representative for a response. Response is warranted. Is there anyone present that would like to address the board at this time? Mr. Cooper.
Thank you. Jeff Cooper, Cornell. I've got, yet two things, but I've got a third one that I have to be financing. First, I'd like to thank two people for their responsiveness in answering my questions about one of the administration speaking at an out-of-state conference with a couple of members of a District 41 vendor. Dr. Gordon, thank you for your quick initial response. Mr. Kenwood, your response cleared up enough of my concerns. To those on the board that tout emails as a better method of communications than a second public participation session, you're not answering emails on a serious matter such as this render your point kind of disingenuous. And those unsure of what I'm talking about, seek out glenellenforum.com. You'll find out. Sam Black would frown if I was to name my names here. On to full-day kindergarten. My impression from the discussion on full-day kindergarten last month and Dr. Gordon's survey of the board showed that we are definitely not in full agreement yet to go forward. But the district did an email survey, a survey that included more District 41 staff than community members. If I recall correctly, 80% of the community don't have kids in the system. I wonder what percentage we're serving of the community. We need to have a lot more than 120 community opinions to feel that we have a community consciousness and community consensus, excuse me. What percent of District 41 staff live in the district? And why would we be surveying staff that are non-residents?
Thank you.
Okay, and
I'm sorry.
What I'm saying is that your survey is a starting point only. If you're going to use a survey to usurp your board members' opinions or sway them, I think that would be greatly disingenuous. If this survey would be used to launch a referendum effort, I would warn those involved to put the brakes on. Learn something from Tuesday's election. And actually, I'll throw in at this point, in the finance meeting, the last thing I heard, Mr. Wojcicki, when we talked about data mining District 41 residents after we just knocked down a referendum, and this district had a referendum, I don't know, 4 or 6 years ago, that got buried. When I hear things like data mining, it seems really kind of you know, subversive to me. Maybe I'm misunderstanding, but it sounds like there's a plan that's about to be started here, and I don't appreciate that. Get back to my comments. Learn something from 2008. Okay.
Sure, please summarize.
Yes. We'll let my comments stand. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Anyone else?
Jessica Como.
Hi, I'm Jessica Como, and I had heard there was a possibility that the gym classes at Forest Glen for the elementary students were possibly going to be cut or reduced hours, and I just wondered if that was true or not.
No, I haven't heard anything, and I think I would know. No, I haven't heard anything about that. There's been no discussion at all on that. Sorry, you kind of threw me on that one. Okay.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Kevin
Rath. Mr. Rath.
I have a lot of things that I could have covered in the next 3 minutes, but I'm going to forego a lot of it and cut to the chase, and I'll start with the positive first. I'm glad the administration is recommending full-day kindergarten based on the recent survey. Considering that, if adopted, we would still need to offer the option of half-day, it really seems like a no-brainer that this should be approved. Even the half-day option should ease budget and facility concerns somewhat and help make this an easier decision. Finally, this is my shot in the dark because we're down to one public participation and because Dr. Gordon's academic achievement presentation is not part of the public agenda package. It doesn't matter how good our kids are doing and how great life is in the district. As we meet here tonight, not one of you sitting up there as a current fourth or fifth grader, commonly known as level three in the system. Yet later this year, you will be asked to approve expanding multi-age to second and third grade. You need to start vehemently asking the questions and picking apart the plans now. It may work for fourth and fifth grades, and even that's debatable, but it will never work for second and third grade.
Thank you. Thank you. And just quickly, I think by law we have to provide half day as an option as well.
Yes.
So that's a law that we follow no matter what.
Right.
Okay. Anyone else?
Lisa Parody.
Hi.
Hello.
I realize I've already emailed you regarding most of what I have to say tonight since I'm not afforded the opportunity to speak after the presentation that I'm here to see. I'm left with speaking now. So I appreciate the data that was presented for the State of the District in the 21st Century Initiative update back in September. I still find it incredibly frustrating that we're seeing data for younger grades 2 months later. The current third graders are the baseline for performance for Common Core and D41. And this was spoken broadly curriculum night and conferences 2 years ago. That start to finish these kids would be the benchmark for Common Core. While I realize they didn't take ISAT last year, they're still measured on MAP and bond students now. We all just went through conferences. That was a heavy focus with MAP. So like the other grades, that could have been reported out. The lack of performance information related specifically to the younger grades continues to make me very curious. What it actually looks like. In my personal and professional experience, when there's lack of complete transparency of data reporting, it suggests that there's something else behind it or something not positive compared to what was reported initially. I've communicated back and forth with Erica over the last couple of weeks, but as a member of the board and as a member of Team 21, what I would ask is that you, when these performance updates are given, that full transparency for a complete set of the data is given, because I think it's only fair as a taxpayer and a parent to have a complete picture, not just fourth grade and up. There's kindergarten, first, second, third grade that feed into all of that. So I look forward to tonight, and I will follow up with email if I have a question.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Stephanie Clark.
Ms. Clark.
Hi. I just had a couple of things. First, I wanted to say I had teacher conferences last week, which I thought were really great, and I actually appreciated that. It doesn't seem that there's this push to have student-led conferences. I didn't have any teachers say that was required for them, and I appreciated that because I like that one-on-one time with the teachers. So I definitely like that change this year. A couple other points. One of my questions is I want to know if the district plans by conducting their own survey to further evaluate 21st century learning and follow up from the survey in the spring. And if we're not going to do a survey, I'd like to know why. I know at the last presentation we were told that the five essential survey would be the survey that we would do, but that's conducted by the state and that's not going to actually survey the details from our 21st century initiatives. I believe the survey is important because the feedback from the spring was a little mixed, and to make sure what we're moving forward with, we don't have any concerns with. I know we're looking to add some new initiatives to what we're doing in the district, so we're adding more variables. And I wanted to mention that in the trip local last week, there was kind of a summary of local area schools and their IFAP scores. And I don't know if this is going to be talked about tonight, so I'll just bring it up briefly, but I noticed a lot of the area schools show growth for meets and exceeds and for exceeds on IFAP. And that includes District 89 with the exception of one school. For District 200, it was kind of mixed. St. Charles had growth. West Chicago, their scores are significantly lower than us, but they also show growth. But I noticed in our district, only Hadley and Lincoln actually show growth in meets or exceeds, and then for exceeding, Hadley was the only school that showed growth. So I'm just curious as to if we're evaluating. I know there was a concern with IFAP that we can cut scores. Everybody was going to experience a dip. And one of our measures to try to prepare for that was one of the changes we implemented last year. But just at first glance, when looking at this, it appears that a lot of schools actually saw growth. And I'm wondering what they're doing different than what we're doing to actually see growth, not a dip. I think that's it. And then I know math and reading are two different things. There was an article that math has seen a lot of growth, but I think reading has been a study. I'm wondering if we're going to evaluate that further. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Kristen Massey.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Kristen Massey. I'm a seventh grader at Hadley and a freshman at Summer West. And I, too, attended conferences last week and wanted to give a shout out to all our administration staff for a great job. It seemed very organized. I would say that one of the things I'm having now, a freshman at West, but something to look into, they have a much easier system as far as signing your child up. You're able to view the entire times available for all their teachers versus ours, where you have to pick and choose and go back and try to remember what you signed up for. So just one little suggestion to make the sign up process a little smoother. I also wanted to compliment Hadley on their transition back to Teams this year. Being from the Teams back in the late 70s, early 80s at Hadley, I think it was a nice change back to that. My seventh grader really struggled with his transition to Hadley last year, and this year continues to have some struggles. And on that team, I'm able to sit down and have conversations with all his teachers, with his four core teachers at the same time, and have those conversations a lot easier than last year, since they all can collaborate on what his needs are. So I do wanted to say that I really think it's a great thing that we brought that back, and I'm really happy to see that he's hopefully going to be able to grow and be much more successful at Hadley.
Okay, thank you very much. Anyone else? All right. Thank you, folks, for your comments. All right. Presentations, reports, updates, and initiatives.
Mr. Hayes. Yeah, we have Jack Hayes.
Okay, thanks. I'll go through a quick summary of the pictures, and if you have any questions, let me know. I'll try to hit where we've been, where we're at, where we're going by each school. So the first few are Churchill. This is the stormwater detention area out in the background, and it's now turning into grass, which is a good sign. Actually getting some grass popping up. I'm going to go to the next one, Mike. This is the hard surface play area and the soft surface play area in the background. So this is up and running and being utilized by Churchill at this point, so that's good. Because the next slide, which will show that where it was, is now under construction. So we excavated out the areas of the old playground, cleared the site, reached bearing soil, which means that we reached good soil, was all tested, and now we can start building the pad back up for the addition. So this week we're bringing in truckloads of stone to bring Churchill up to the building pad height and everything weather dependent. The goal is to bring that up and plan to start putting foundations in for the addition, depending on how things look weather-wise. So that's where we're at on Churchill. On Forest Glen, again, grass is popping and where the detention work was done this summer. The second picture is we've been working on footings and foundation walls for the addition, underground plumbing, and then we've actually been able to start some masonry of the addition at Forest Glen. And the next picture is just another perspective of the same thing. So work is ongoing there. Again, weather dependent. We have the potential of bringing up the masonry bearing walls, putting up the steel joists for the roof, and if we really get lucky, trying to get the roof in place for Forest Glen so we have closed in addition. We'll just have to see how things go. Moving on to Lincoln, both of the classroom pod additions are fully enclosed, including glass and door entrances, so that's going along well. That center area there is where the underground detention work was done between the pods, so that's in place, and final connection to site utilities is going on. I think there's a couple of interior pictures. We've got interior ductwork going. We've even gotten to the point of putting up some paint. And so basically, we're moving into the interior finishes within the classrooms. Work is progressing very well on the inside, so schedule's looking real good. One more picture of the hallway, which will lead to those doors. We have plywood on there now because we don't want to bang up your nice final doors. Those will be the last ones in. And then at Franklin, pretty similar to Lincoln, although there's more site work here. And so there's still a lot of work that we're trying to get done on the outside. The basic shell of the building, we're working on doors and windows. We've got a couple of stairs to put in. Next picture is, that's the outdoor courtyard on the south side. No, the north side of the addition. It's a little hard to tell there in the dark, but the concrete slab is in, which is a multicolored concrete slab. And in the foreground where the wood is at, there'll be a stair coming out of the outdoor courtyard, and I think there's an interior one at Franklin as well. Again, ductwork is going on. All the roughing is going on. The primer's on at Franklin, so finished paint will be coming soon behind it. We'll start hanging ceilings. Millwork's scheduled to be here by the end of the month. So the schedule at Franklin and Lincoln is looking very good in terms of the classroom spaces for December. We're very weather dependent on finishing up some of the site work. We're hoping to have all the hard surfaces done at Lincoln. So what we have to do is come back in the spring and do final grading, landscape touch-up, that type of thing. And at Franklin, we're hoping to get down the binder course for the hard surface play area as well as the hard surface concrete. And then the same thing. So that's a little more weather dependent, but that's our goal for Franklin. But in terms of the classroom spaces at Franklin and Lincoln, we're feeling very, very strong about getting it done for the Christmas break. Does anybody have any questions?
I had a question that was based on a meeting I was at last week, and it was with the League of Women Voters. And so it was people from lots of different kind of age groups, and this one woman said to me that she'd been walking by Lincoln, was excited to see the sides going up, and she asked me if I went over to Central Services Office, could I see the plans? I said absolutely, you could go over there. But what it made me think about to ask you tonight is it possible to put outside each of our buildings kind of a weather covered sign that shows the the final
the end
product,
result.
Yeah, the end result.
Okay.
So that there's a look. I just wanted to put that out there to see if that might be something we might do. Lots of community members. Churchill walking by, although
yeah,
that would be
good. We've actually had people walking by Churchill, too. When I was out there one day, there was a lady that came out.
People come about the court, Churchill Woods, and curious about it. So I would just ask you if you have other work like this, and if they put something up that says, you know, here's the, you know, the date it's going to be finished, because I know we updated our website to that when we changed the deadline, so that that's updated. But you know, could we have something up there that's visual for people?
Sure, we can take a look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anybody else?
I have some questions looking at Forest Glen and Churchill moving forward into the winter. I just want to make sure I understand exactly where, how we're going to handle the winter for wherever we stop. Your 30-day outlook for Churchill doesn't include footings or foundations.
In the written report. Let me grab this so that I don't misspeak to what you're looking at.
It's about creating a new building pad for the additions and compacting the stone.
Right, and we feel pretty confident that we're going to be able to accelerate that schedule to the point where we could potentially put foundations in.
Before December 10th or so?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, you know, everything was dependent on getting to where we're at now, and now we've got a couple of weeks built in to bring it up to bearing, you know, for foundations. And we think that's going to be achievable.
Okay.
And so the sequence of activities for the foundations will be largely driven by the ability to put them in and protect them once they're in. And that's the key at this point.
And so with that said, most likely that's where we will stop for the winter.
Yes.
Churchill.
Absolutely. If we can get that, we're either going to stop at bearing height of for the building pad or at foundations. So that's it.
Okay.
So you're not pouring the pad?
No.
And no masonry.
We might do a little bit of underground plumbing or something, but nothing vertical beyond that point.
And so then that takes me to Forest Glen, where you're vertical already.
Right.
Okay. In the next 30 or 45 days, you will try to enclose the building and get it more or less sealed as best you can with basically.
Yeah, that's really the goal. If we can get the masonry bearing up, we then can get the steel on. If we can get the steel on, we can get the roof on, and then we just do some temporary enclosures of the vertical openings, and we're enclosed.
And the key thing is you've ordered your steel. If we don't get the steel, are we gonna have to pay a premium to store it for the winter, or is the manufacturer taking care of that? Because if we don't get to that point and the steel's manufactured already,
yeah,
it's going to have to be somewhere.
Right. Yeah, so potentially we would have to pay for storage, potentially.
I just want to make sure we're clear.
Yep.
But the goal is in the next 30 to 45 days, get it where we can seal it with Visqueen on the windows and the doors and all that good stuff.
Yes.
So we're shot. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
For those of you that have our agenda, we do have a PTA Executive Council report, but we are not doing that tonight. We're going to move that to once a month instead of every meeting. So we'll move on to the Academic Achievement Presentation.
I'm going to do this update data. The primary focus for tonight is really on that page who's through third grade data. We made sure that back in October. But when we post this, it will lead to the earlier presentation, just as a reminder for people to be able to refer back to that. So this is a snapshot from the IIRC website. You'll see there's kind of a new look if you've been on it previously. They're trying to incorporate some new features, and that information is really highlighted for you there. It's released every year on October 31st and that. And it's really trying to get at both that academic growth and also kind of a more complete picture of the school climate, which is why they were requiring us to do the 5 essential surveys, things like that. And again, remember, no AYP this year because of the waiver and that. And that top circle up there really just shows you that this year, 80% of our kids met or exceeded. And that's an overall number. They kind of combined both math and reading. With that, last year our overall total was 79% for meeting and exceeding with that. This just, I know Paul had shared that article with you when they ranked the top five school districts, just in the DuPage County and that, and you can see on there math and reading at 8th grade, and then overall our math growth kind of district-wide goes through 8th grade and that. That's back at the end of October. Just as a reminder, remember, we're moving out of ISAT and into PARC. This is kind of just that general information. So this will be our first year in the spring. We'll do both what we're calling a PBA, a performance-based assessment, and then an end-of-the-year assessment. That PBA should hit before spring break, and then the end of the year will fall. I think it actually starts late April into May, right around there in that. We'll give us more information. The end of the year assessment data is more of a kind of a more traditional format. We'll have more extended responses. And we plan to start doing some training with our staff in January. I was on their website today and they're still kind of updating some of their module, particularly for the computer based. They're focusing right on a little bit more on the paper and pencil that many or some districts will be using. So here we've got, this is our current kindergarten class, and you'll notice up in the yellow box, this is the first year where we're asking all schools to make sure that their kindergartners take the fall math. In the past, some of the schools, they kind of chose to do it in the fall to get that kind of as an additional data point. They've always done it in the winter, but we've asked everybody to do that, and so they did do that this year. And so on the slides moving forward, your purple bar is the average RIT math score for current kindergartners, and the blue bar is going to be your average reading RIT score. And if you recall, NWA doesn't use grade levels or equivalent, it's always a RIT score. It's kind of hard sometimes to wrap your head around what you mean by that. So the gray bars are the NWA mean score for fall kindergartners. So it's from their 2011 Normie sample in that. And so you can see we're slightly above kind of that NWA average score. And if you looked at the percentile for that 144 in math, that's like at the 51st, 52nd percentile in math. And then in reading, 143 was considered the 53rd, 54th percentile to get that 143. So just kind of, you can kind of compare where our kindergartners are starting this fall to the mean average RIT score in the NWA Normie sample.
Karen, is this taken in October?
September, more September. We tried to be done early October, so it was pretty much in September.
And as I recall, the RIT scores, you know, a difference of 5 was significant. Considered a significant difference or not? I don't. In other words, 144 versus a 149.
Is right. That, I mean, it's probably getting you. I can kind of quick look up what the 149 is because I've got percentile equivalents for all of that. But as I'm looking that up too, I can. Beginning of year in kindergarten, we don't have a lot of kind of what I would say, you know, data to be able to bring forward. Mm-hmm. Our teachers do administer a fall Fountas and Pinnell assessment, but obviously not all of our kindergartners are reading, so they're going to have a score on everybody. But we ask them to start getting that kind of first initial running record on our kindergartners by October. And they'll have their data in by the end of this month. And then we also do give the ISO, which is the Illinois Snapshot for Early Literacy, and that gives us a lot of good information on some literacy skills. And typically they use that kind of performative data to give them that. But so the 149 is about the 67th to 69th percentile compared to the 50th. So, you know, it doesn't look like much on here, but it's, you know, it's a little
bit of okay. But so, would my interpretation be that our kindergartners are coming in a little more prepared at this stage, since the exams in September, a little more prepared than the average, and this would be our baseline for growth, right? Is that the way I should interpret that?
Right. It'll be our baseline for growth in the spring. You'll be able to look at the fall to spring. And then moving forward, we'll now have some cohort data on our first graders next year because everybody's going to the fall. So you can start.
Thank you.
Karen, I just probably missed something that you told us. That the NWEA, is that a national average?
It's a national norm.
So is it instructive to look at a state breakdown?
They don't give us the state breakdown.
We don't have that. Okay.
Yeah. So what I can tell you what we will do just as a Glen Burnie feeder district is we will give kind of our general data, and we're able to kind of compare just with our feeder schools to see kind of how we're doing and we're kind of in the process. GCC has asked us kind of not to really, make that republic, that kind of a thing, but we at least are able to look at that just to see how we're doing with kind of all of the tables.
Thanks.
And we're in the process of collecting that fall data. We typically don't start at third grade because not all the districts are using math at the primary grade as well. So,
how many other schools, how different are we than our feeders using math?
Like first grade do it, but kindergarten are pretty inconsistent. Mm-hmm. And some of the districts, we do it three times a year. Some of them only do it twice a year. And districts are starting to have that conversation, what will you do when PARC comes forward? But, as you try and give out your data, it's nice to have that. And plus we have a lot of historical data with MAP. So we'll have those conversations in the future about that. So here is our current first grade data. And again, remember, we didn't test them all in the fall. So what you have here is our spring, the spring scores for them, and then where they are in the fall. Again, purple is math, blue is reading, and then those gray bars are the NWA kind of norming. And it's not unusual to kind of see a summer slide in here. They're pretty comparable, 169 to 170, and 166 to 168. So it stayed pretty consistent, went up a little, which is great. It's kind of like to see that, but I would say it would be significant. So again, since we don't have their kindergarten fall, we're not kind of comparing that. But on the next one.
So should I take away from there that that spring 2014 to the fall 2014, that's a cohort, right?
That's a cohort. So these are the same kids.
So there was little growth during that period.
Correct.
Okay. And part of the rationale for that is you're saying it's the summer gap month?
Well, it's not unusual to see a summer slide. I mean, we see it sometimes even with, kind of F&P and things like that. I'm glad to see that it maintained in that. I've talked to some teachers, too, and we've always had that conversation you asked kind of when we did the math test and that. And some districts do wait till about October to kind of do the fall to give kids kind of that chance to get back in the swing of things. For us, I think it's important. We just kind of want to start the year with that kind of initial data point and be able to kind of move on. So we've kind of moved it forward. And then we will do our winter testing in December. We had moved that up a couple years ago out of January just because January had access stuff going on. I mean, there's a lot. And a couple of other of our different districts moved it to December as well. So you get more time between September and then the winter test.
Well, I think that's a good point to make, John. I know we've talked about this before, that if we wait further into October, then we're not, what I remember you saying to us is that we're not assessing some of that summer to be thinking about how do we close some of the gaps, like Churchill starting his mobile bookmobile, certain things that we were doing and started to do over the summer in order to shore up, some of that summer slug. So, I think it's a more accurate assessment on some level, which I think is a good thing.
And
we want to be looking at that, yeah.
So here's our current second grade. And we tried to get their growth data on there a little bit more. So here's their spring kindergarten. Again, purple's math, blue is reading. And then here was their data from fall to spring as first graders. So that's their data last year. and you can see, you know, here was their math from 166 to 189. And then this shows you that's the percent of kids who met or exceeded their growth target over there. And then so as first graders from fall to spring last year, their reading score went from an average grade of 164 up to 182. So there was good growth there. And then that was, I mean, 84% of our first graders last year met their math NWA growth target that's set by NWA. Mm-hmm. And it was 58% in math. And then here is their fall scores. So obviously, you know, you hope to see it. The trend, that purple line is going up each time. Here, you know, you have a little bit of a dip. That is pretty typical at second grade because we've seen it for years. Our K-1 kids take the math for primary test, and the fall of second grade they take the math test for grades 2 through 5. So the test changes, they don't have that auditory support anymore. So historically, we've always seen a slight dip at the fall, in the fall of second grade. So I probably wouldn't be as concerned. We just then want to watch where they end up in the spring to make sure that they had the good growth. And reading actually only went down from 182 to 181.
When you say auditory support, so
they have
headphones,
and yeah, things are like the directions are given to them, the cue as to what they're supposed to do. So, and this is, you know, it's just something that I saw when you see the next slide. These reverse more kids at the math growth target than in reading. It's just something to kind of take note of to watch. So, again, current second graders starting spring of kindergarten, their first grade data, and then their fall of second grade data. And then the next slide is our current third graders. And so, again, here's their fall to spring in first grade. Purple math, 168 to 189. I mean, you know, they continue to be above the NWA. And then math, or literacy went from 166 up to 183. So that would have been their first grade growth. And you can see here, that's the percent of kids who met or exceeded their growth target. 79% in math and 61% in reading. If you remember, on second grade, those bars were reversed, so it's kind of, but they're consistent in that more of them met their growth target in math as second graders as well. So here's your first grade data. Here's your second grade data. Again, fall to spring. The purple bar was 184 to 200, and literacy went from 182 to 196. So again, some decent growth there, and you can see it here, 75% and then 63%. So slight percentage more met their reading target and slightly less in math. But again, it was just interesting that those bars had flipped.
Karen, can you give some insight on that? Is it some of the change in the math going from second grade? I forgot that they end up, they get out of the primary assessment, which is really, it's different from the second to fifth. Is it some of the assessment itself?
I mean, historically, I think our second graders have always had good growth from fall to spring. You know, that in the fall, you know, it's the new test. It takes them a little while. But by the spring, you know, they show good growth. They're comfortable. They've used it in math. But are you asking, like, why do I see?
Yeah, why the flip, do you think?
You know what? I don't know. Yeah, you know what? That would probably be conversations that the buildings, and I know a lot of the principals are having, but they would have with their teachers as they look at kind of individual kids who met their growth target, who didn't. Sometimes they'll look and see, you know, some kids miss it by a point or two. They may grow,
right,
but they didn't reach their growth target. And I would want to kind of hypothesize.
But I think what you said is important because we look at these as aggregated, right?
Right, all this.
So when you disaggregate it and then you look even further at per child, you know, we as parents, we would get that information home and you'd see it was, you know, it was a point or it was 2 points. And so, you know, there could be any number of reasons for that. Got tired at the end of the assessments and, you know, those types of things too.
Right.
So. Just so I understand, the flip you're talking about is from your last slide where the spring growth was more in reading than it was in math. And this
Right. So
but this is cohort specific.
This is cohort specific, exactly.
Because there really isn't a flip by the cohort.
No, not at all. The cohort's consistent.
The cohort's consistent. The third graders that in their second grade year had a better improvement in math, and that they were consistent the next year.
Right.
Just because it's not really a flip, it's two cohorts.
Absolutely. You know, to me though, when I saw that, you know, it's just interesting, and that would be something then, okay, so it'll be like, so as we look towards next year, it will be interesting to see if as a cohort they maintain, you know.
So what is it about that grade level?
Right. You know, you could really, it'd be hard to make that kind of projection. Right. Right, but as a cohort, they're consistent, which is really what you want to see consistent, or you know, obviously improvement as well. And so the data for fourth through well technically nine, that would have been last year's third through eighth graders, was in the previous PowerPoint. So Mike, you want to go to the next slide? So this chart should look familiar. We had shared it with you before, the Fountas and Canal data. And this is really just the spring of 2014. We don't have their fall data in here. Most teachers haven't entered into the data warehouse, but not all of them. And when we were working with Nancy on some of that, we decided not to pull it because we didn't have everybody's and to, with conferences to quickly tell people you need it in there immediately. I knew it was going to be tough for them. So anyway, the gray bar is the end of the year target, and this is the reading level you want them to remember. Fountas and Canal is individually administered, kind of one-on-one. And these are basically reading levels of the students. So this shows you the number of students at the end of last year, what reading level they were at. And so obviously you want, you know, lower numbers below the gray line, or below the gray line, and you know it's great when you have higher numbers above the gray line. And so that chart over here is really just that percent of students with it. But this is an area where we can continue to kind of monitor by cohort. I mean, this just shows you separate grade levels in that. But it, you know, it's administered by a different person every year, obviously whoever your literacy teacher happens to be, but we've used it for a number of years. I think our teachers are, you know, they're gaining confidence in how they administer it. Every so often, we kind of do a little bit of a refresher to make sure we've got some of that kind of inner rate or reliability. Mm-hmm. And it went, and we used to kind of have them not go too far beyond the grade level target, and then
what do you mean?
We like once the kids kind of got to say you knew that we're at level, we weren't so worried about how much further you could take them. But as we move forward with some of the initiatives, we have said, go ahead and see how far they can go. And then we're trying to kind of match some of those like learners.
When you say as far as they can go, you mean on that test, right?
See how far they can go. Right. It goes up to Z. I mean, that's as high as it goes. I mean, look at, we've got some very, very strong leaders. You know, look at that at first grade. I mean, mm-hmm. That's great. And there's a comprehension component, so it's not just reading.
Mm-hmm. It's understanding
as well.
So second grade reading is impressive. If, yeah, I just want to make sure I'm reading this right. If I understand, take the kindergartners, for example, we're looking at, you know, roughly 25% that are below the target, 25% that are at, and 50% above.
Yeah, you're over here. Right.
Right. I mean, roughly. I mean, I know it's really 21% or whatever. But
you know, when I started in the district, we were, you know, our goal was a B. And I remember when we talked with kindergarten teachers, they're like, oh my God, you know, it was like, how are we going to get kids there and that? I mean, you know, we really kind of pushed. And we adjusted these in 2013 as well, because even Fountas and Canal had they had adjusted their kind of end of year benchmarks. So it's just, you know, it's good information. This is obviously, it's very valuable at the building level for them to be able to sit down and talk about where they're kids are at the building to pad data walls, and I know they're going to, they've kind of moved to an electronic data wall, and I've been encouraging them to go back to just a physical data wall, because it's nice to see, you can actually see the kids, and teachers kind of are very aware of where they are, and you want to make sure kids are making good progress.
So I remember when we built the data wall in each of the schools, we did a tour at least, I remember Lincoln's and I think that Franklin's at the time, and there was another component to it that I thought was important, was that as the teachers looked at the data walls, there was this conversation about, these are all of our kids, so if I'm teaching the sciences, what can I be doing to shore up the reading or enhance the reading of higher level reading? And so, I do think it's important to have a physical connection to it.
So, but again, it's great data at the building level, and it's great for PLCs to kind of have that conversation about how the kids are doing and kind of the individual progress that they're making.
So, if I'm a teacher, to try to operationalize this a little bit, if I'm a teacher and our target is D, that's what my lesson plans and my goals and all are set to? Or is this, you know, we have lesson plans and goals and then we just see where we are versus the targets?
Well, since the teachers are using kind of that reader's workshop format, they'll do kind of a whole group mini lesson that targets some of the specific standards and that. But then when they pull small groups, they're going to target kind of where they're at from an instructionally. So it really depends where your kids are starting at. This year, I know they have kids who came in reading around the year, and so they're going to start with where they're at now and keep working them. And we have other kids who are VA, in other words, they're, you know, non-reader, and so they'll start with those kids and then work on, you know, we'll start with concepts of print and those kinds of things and shoring them up. So they're doing small group instruction just like our other teachers are, targeting where the kids are at instructionally and then moving them as far as they can in a given year.
And I look at that and I just, there's, you know, from A to O, that's a lot. I mean, is that my differentiating, you know, three groups at a time? I mean, it just seems like a lot of differentiation that has to occur.
I mean, they'll pull like learners. They're not, it's not going to be one-on-one. It's going to be small group.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a, you know, you may have a child who is really kind of, and one or the other might be kind of very unique. They may need to meet with that child one-on-one. But typically, it is small group. And, you know, they probably have more like, I would say 3 to 5, maybe, you know, the principals are here, it could even be more than that, small group. And, you know, obviously they're not able to meet with all kids every day. Typically you meet with your struggling learners more frequently, you know, you try to get to them every single day. But, yeah, it could, you know, depending on how diverse your group is. You know, but teachers, you know, it wouldn't be unusual for kindergarten teachers to share some of their kids for some of the small groups to kind of help create more like learners, especially if you each have somebody who's reading like much higher than the others, kind of put them together and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. That was some of the emphasis also to have kids feel like they weren't alone in that either acceleration, right, and wanted to continue to read at a higher level, and also our learners that come in at that D level as a kindergarten to say, okay, they're there, and I think it's important for you to keep accelerating that and make sure that we can move them as far as they go, because then they're starting further along, certainly in first and second, and we know that the content reading, as you said before, is really tied into understanding math better, problem solving, math problems, you know, all that, it's all connected, so it's important.
And last slide, we had this slide, I don't know if it was in the previous one and that, but just some of the focus really kind of at that building level is really to kind of close that achievement gap, and these are just some of the subgroups that we're looking at, but quarterly updates to the board. The next update will be in February, and it's likely we're going to actually have principals kind of share some of their data and what they're have been working on, both to close that achievement gap, but kind of where their kids are and on track for things. And again, from an assessment perspective, we'll have PARP to look at, continue to look at the math and the Fountain Canal. Plans for level 2 and level 3 to kind of do some collaboration on multi-age. There's also some professional development plans that Lori's working on with PDT. And then just a reminder that by the essential survey that we have to do, that'll move back into the IIRC school report card, which is why we are required to do that. So
remind us what IIRC is.
Illinois Interactive Report Card. And I mean, it's accessible, and anybody can go on and kind of look at school.
Right. They just redid that. I know that they sent those links up.
It has definitely a good look to it as well.
Karen, when you come back in February with the update, what assessments, where will they be with their assessments at that point? What will we be seeing?
You know what? We probably haven't kind of talked about it that much. We'll have the winter math testing, but from NWA doesn't, it's not kind of like, we don't have kind of individual growth targets, but, you know, the principals kind of know who's kind of on, not principals, but the teachers know who's on track to kind of meeting their growth target. Sometimes you'll have kids who have already met their growth target. I know teachers are always like, oh, I hate the winter testing. My kids don't do so well. I mean, so some kids drop, and then they have this fantastic spring, and other kids peak now, but then they kind of flatline. So it's just kind of one more data point, but we'll talk with the principals kind of what that data kind of looks like, maybe in connection to kind of the Rising Stars and their plans, maybe what are some of the things that they've done around kind of, you know, that achievement gap where we're at. You know, we've got more and more common assessments occurring that's specific to the curriculum. We haven't tried to kind of quantify by that. I probably wouldn't want to bring out any new data, but we'll really kind of have to talk and figure out what are different data points that we would be bringing forward in February.
Mm-hmm. One other question. This was earlier in the presentation. When you talked about PARP, it was slide number 4. And I know that we talked about this briefly, but it was also brought up in Team 21, and that is that we're using the all the computer version of the PARP assessment. I know we field tested it using that as well.
Yeah, we actually field tested some paper and pencil as well. Right.
So there was a question that I had asked about the keyboard piece, because I know that there's the, you know, the PARP assessment is a little bit more manipulation in terms of the keyboard. Is there a plan? Did teachers find that that was a concern in terms of the field testing? What did they find, and are we going to spend any time in terms of helping kids navigate some of that, or be prepared for that?
Well, and I'd probably separate from just traditional keyboarding to learning to navigate the test features. And there's a slight change. Far more kind of accessibility features that all kids can access, things like even extended time and some of those things, which in the past was always reserved for kids who had an IEP or 504 ESL students and that. So there's some of those features. So we are, I'm working with the literacy and math coaches for the next couple months to kind of create a training plan for our teachers at the January Institute. A couple things we need to do is, you know, making sure the teachers are actually taking the assessments, because it's a different test, and parents can take it, or you can go online. I was on there again this weekend and today, and in the middle of assessment, and they didn't have the next passage up there. So they're still not quite where they need to be, but there are lots of what kids could find to be fun features, like they can, you know, mark X's through things, they can change the color of the background with the font, and there's a huge magnifying glass. And so, you know, as we've talked with kind of DuPage County, is giving kids opportunities to kind of practice with those features, play with those features, and because there's some of them, like the magnifying glass is not, I mean, it makes each letter huge. I would not want kids to be spending their testing time, you know, on that. So we want the kids to be familiar with those different kind of accessibility features, and allow them to practice. And some of that, like, you know, the test I was taking today, you know, you kind of, it's like matching puzzle pieces as you connect your answers and, mm-hmm. you know, some of those things. So we're going to have the staff really get familiar with all of those, kind of understanding what's involved. And then, mm-hmm. And over the past couple of years, we've been saying, you know, don't spend time on test prep, ISAT stuff. You know, good teaching's good teaching. But this year we feel like, in all fairness to the kids, we need to give them time to play with Park and figure out some of those. And, you know, the important thing is if that's not something you would use on a regular basis, you don't need it because it's kind of one test. But there's still just other little tech features, a calculator, all of that that they need to know how to use. So that's what I would say is kind of what they need to know from a technology perspective.
Right. And no, I'm glad to hear that because I know that we talked a little bit about that early on, even last summer. And you know, you bring up this point when I Googled the park and you can do a test, you know, a test assessment, which I did. There are some of the navigation things that I think that even I, that use computers a lot, and some of the features, you thought, oh, this could sidetrack somebody.
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that. The other thing is, are we planning to get some links in that out to parents? So that I know you talked about that, but just making that kind of reinforcing that to get links out so that they're aware of it.
And they can
yeah.
Yeah. One of the things too that they're quite long passages even at third grade.
Yeah.
And so we have to make sure kids remember to scroll because they have the paragraphs numbered, but there was like almost 20 paragraphs, and potentially kids could just see what's on their screen and stop reading until the question would prompt you. For paragraph 19, you know, that kind of a thing. So just,
yeah. And I really respect the time that teachers are needing this year particularly to have to spend to do the assessment so that they're prepared. But I, you know, even just a little bit that I've done, I think it's really important that they have that experience so that they can communicate some of that to their kids. Because it's definitely different.
It's different. Yeah. But they've been doing MAP online for a while,
yeah.
And MAP is incorporated like drag and drop and some of those things. So hopefully it won't all be boring. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe.
Sure. So just a couple quick things for me. I'm all for closing the achievement gap, and I think that's important. You know, but as you know, I always 50% of our kids are above the target. So I would like to see a bullet point there one day, you know, around monitoring instruction and learning. For those that are exceeding the target and what we're doing to help them continue to exceed, right? So, mm-hmm. But, you know, I always say that. But
Park will be a growth model, too, where, I mean, it's about all kids making growth.
Right. Yeah. But I think it's important to have the bullet point up there because then it says someone is taking ownership of looking at not just the kids that aren't achieving, but the kids that are exceeding and how do we, because we have a lot of them in our school, and that's fortunate, right? So
right.
We should continue to push that. You don't need to answer now, but it'd be kind of interesting to understand in the top five, that first slide you had. You know, so we didn't make top five in a couple of areas. Where did we fall? You know, 7, 8, 50, 60. And what's the communication around this? You know, one of my concerns, which I've expressed before, is you put these things up on the internet, and they're just charts, but the key takeaways aren't necessarily there for each chart. So, you know, I might look at this and see the reverse, and go, "Oh my God, you know, something really bad is there," because I know one's taller and one's shorter. So, I don't know, Erica, if we're doing anything now with starting to put a little more, just instead of the chart and go figure it out. You know, some key takeaways. That people understand what this is supposed to mean. Right? I think that would be helpful in our communication. So thank you very much. Anybody else? Or?
Or even just these yellow boxes, this is an add-on too.
Okay.
You know, just to give a little feedback on the NWEA like that. Good job, I agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm looking at this, I won't even know what NWEA is, right? So.
Well, I would just encourage us, I mean, everybody in the room, certainly, but us board members, to go on the interactive report card because it does show where we end up because it compares on each calendar. You know, it gives you that information. So
helpful. You know, everyone's time is valuable, so anything we can do to make it easier for them to understand this would be helpful. Thank you. Anyone else?
Thank you, Karen.
Thanks, Karen.
Fortunately, there was no time limit on that one, so we're good. All right, discussion items. Full day kindergarten.
We'll continue the conversation on full day kindergarten tonight. Quick overview. Tying it to our student learning and achievement in the 21st century and the early grades, the focus will be on providing a strong foundation in reading and math. As students progress through the grades, there'll be more emphasis on higher order and innovative thinking skills. So continuing to frame this conversation tonight around our long-range plan. So why full day kindergarten? Listed a number of pieces here around the social, emotional, more time to meet the increased demands of Common Core, more time to focus and reflect on activities, the transitions that occur within kindergarten, more time to address all the standards, but including the next generation science standards.
Paul, I'm sorry, but you might be blocking people's view by standing on that side. Maybe on this side.
You don't give Karen one bit. The moment I'm up here for 30 seconds.
No, I'm sorry. I see some people like stretching their necks. So take care of that.
All right. I'm good. So why full day kindergarten? These are some critical aspects. But if we present this plan and our teachers are here tonight with us to really walk through their schools or facilities and really show you how things lay out within our buildings. Because full day kindergarten is important, but if we're also speaking about facilities, that too will come to light. Well, you can see that District 15 is the only district. 89 is currently in conversations with their board. What I understand that they'll look for adoption of this early next year. But the other districts will be offering full day kindergarten.
How long is full day?
They're defined by their school hours.
Okay.
So
you're thinking of it for us. How long is it?
Defined by our school hours as well. So currently our elementary is not 9 in the morning until 3:25. Okay. Because one of the things you have to remember, you have to have that transportation for those students as well, and transportation costs would go up incredible amounts if you were to offer kindergarten transportation at a different time.
Okay.
Good question, though. No, I appreciate it. So one of the things that I believe are really important is to recognize that this is a recommendation way before my time. That think tank back in 2012 said, brought forward a recommendation to the board and to administration that they believed in full day kindergarten. And then last year, both Team 21 and CIT, the Continuous Improvement Team, reaffirmed that recommendation, that full day kindergarten is something that this district should have, that we should not be an outlier within the Glen Bar feeder system regarding full day kindergarten. In January 2014, the administration, I presented a long-range facilities plan. And quite honestly, it's about a year ago this time that I talked about these similar pieces with phase one and phase two. This time last year, I really walked through those same facilities, bringing forward that idea again around full-day kindergarten and how it worked within our facilities and the importance behind it. So this is not a new recommendation just by this superintendent, by this administration. Now, we've talked about it at different special meetings. We've now surveyed the community. We had a great conversation. One of the things that the board said, survey the community. The next day, I think we had a survey out to the community. I was pleased with the response. When you do surveys, never sure what you're going to get. We had 642 people respond. Really appreciated the Daily Herald and the Tribune carrying it and putting it within their story so others, community members, could link to it and be able to access the survey. 446 or 69% said they believe District 41 should implement full-day kindergarten. Of the 222 comments, 162 supported full-day kindergarten, 35 against, and 25 undecided. Let's try to break that down. And then who responded to the survey? These numbers you can see are very similar. 374 parents of future kindergartners and 373 parents of guardians of children currently enrolled. We had 128 community members with no children. And then we had 156 District 41 staff members respond to the survey.
So
and then how did, oh, sorry.
Sorry, the 156 now, could they also be embedded in the 374 and
When I looked at it,
they could have answered twice. So the so parents of a future kindergartner could have also answered that if they identified as a parent or guardian of
the
child.
Yeah, these two, very similar. But
so they,
these two down here.
If there was a staff member that is also a parent of a student in D41, I don't know if that's not, but if it was, then they could have identified.
I just want to make sure people understood how we got to the 642, because that adds up differently.
Yeah, that's what, So how did they respond? Broke down the 374 parents of future kindergartners who attend D41. 78% strongly agreed. You can see the breakdown from there, 12% somewhat, 14% do not, 2% they weren't sure. The 373 parents who have a child currently enrolled, 65% strongly agreed, 17 somewhat, 20 did not agree, 20% did not agree, and 2% did not know. The 128, I found this one to be very interesting because we're always, what's that 80%, you know, that 70 to 80% of the community members that don't have kids in our district, where are they at? So I was pleasantly surprised with this, where 72% of that 128 strongly agreed, 11% somewhat, 19% no, 1% did not know. The staff, 68% strongly agreed, 26% somewhat agreed, and 5%. So some interesting numbers.
If I can talk about the staff piece, when we had, I'm trying to remember which district came up to tour, it was in the fall, or spring rather, but they had just started full-day kindergarten, remember? Paxson. They had done full-day kindergarten. They were in their second full round of it, I believe. And so I asked the question of a couple of the, there were some teachers there too, who had the memory of not of having students come in with a half a day complement of kindergarten, and then the following year, first full year of it, and second year. And they all talked about, as staff members, part of the, for them, the benefit, the value of getting kids that were further along. You know, their content, understanding, a full day of being in class, the social-emotional piece of it, being used to being in it. So I think that was certainly an important group to survey, to the extent that do they see value as even staff members at other levels in the organization to see value of it. So, you know, if those numbers were flipped, then I would, that would be different questions for me. You know, about that.
Some information. The next slide is really what I'm going to be asking the board on November 24th. Your academic leadership teams have recommended this from Think Tank, Team 21, CIT. The administration, current administration, past administration have recommended this. 640 some odd community members, staff members are recommending this that I will be bringing forward on November 24th that the board allow me to go out and bring forward two solutions. There's one already that we've looked at is a K-5 school. And then the second one that I engage the FGM around is looking at an early childhood center. Both have some very significant positive impacts for the community. There's some barriers to both, but we would bring those forms to you as well. But I really am hopeful that the board supports this recommendation, allows us to go out and study this further. From that, we would bring those to the community, allow the community voice to be had on those recommendations and those ideas around, as people have asked, would community members want an early childhood center? One of those pieces that people have asked me, would parents be comfortable? For some parents, they would have to put their kindergartner on a bus. It would be centrally located. Is that something they would want? Or on a K-5, you know, if we were looking at a school, you would have to look at some boundary questions. We're an 8-square-mile district. So those are the pieces that we've got to fully vet, but I don't think we can do until we have one or two scenarios that sit in front of individuals and people can have comment on those on the plans. And that's what the, correct me if I'm wrong, December 3rd? December 3rd, all right. December 3rd town hall would be geared toward. So I jumped ahead, but supports a full-day kindergarten for all families. And that's the recommendation that I'm bringing forward, that it's a recommendation for all full-day kindergarten. We'll show you here in a moment. The principals will walk through their buildings and show you how current usage is being utilized. And then if they were to add full-day kindergarten there, there literally is no room within the building. It is jam-packed, and there's no flexibility, which concerns me greatly. So that's what we will be bringing forward to the board in a week. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Linda. There you are.
Yeah.
She's going to walk through Abraham Lincoln and kind of show that how the building is being used and utilized.
So I'm Linda Schweikhofer. I'm the principal of Lincoln School. And we are so excited about bringing all of our kids on the roof in January. And that's a big positive. One of the things, one of our purposes here is to talk about our building space and how it's going to be utilized in January and afterwards, and then the possibility of what would happen if we brought in extra full-day classrooms. So our portable kids, our kids in the portables, are currently our level 3 student kids. And they're going to be coming in and moving into that new narrative room and the new rooms over there. We've got a few changes that are happening within the building, movement around of a few other classrooms. But I just need to say this is the first year that I've been in the district or that I've been at Lincoln School that we had only 4 sections at each grade level. We are traditionally a 4. There's always, every year there's been at least a 5 sections somewhere. And so because we are only 4 sections this year, all of our kids will fit within this framework. We have a place right now for our PBL, a small classroom here, and we'll be able to bring back the data wall, which we lost over time. So we're going to bring that, Karen talked about a little bit earlier, we're going to bring back the data wall in January sometime. So when I look at this, as an administrator, what kinds of constraints are there for us? I wanted to look at it from the district in 4 big areas. The first area is that we are congested. We are full building. We're using all of our space. We've got areas that really stick out to me are our gymnasium. Our gymnasium, we have 2 gymnasiums. They're small in size in comparison to a gymnasium that you may see in some other schools. And we use this gymnasium for our lunchroom. And our lunchroom is full to capacity. We have to shut down our gym 20 minutes prior to lunch in order to set up and bring all the tables out of storage. And then what we do is we have to put all those clean tables, put them away. It takes time to wash the floors and dry the floors. So therefore, we cannot have PE in this gymnasium before and after lunch for a while. We cannot fit any more kids in the gymnasium during our lunch period. We are definitely wall-to-wall kids, wall-to-wall tables. Another area that is strained is our main hallway. As you can see from this diagram, all of our kids, we've got one big hallway that goes through the courts through our building. And before lunch and after lunch, all of our kids are in that hallway going back and forth. That's a concern. It's crowded in one hallway. Everyone going in different directions makes it difficult. another area which we may think, well, what's the, you know, how big deal, but it is a big deal if you live in the building as much as we do, is that there is one set of bathrooms here for all of this area. There's one set of bathrooms here for all the kids and teachers in this area. One set of bathrooms here. This is a little bit easier. We've got less classrooms here. But that is a concern. We have issues with bathroom space, not having enough in our building. And something that's not been addressed by this plan at all, and it's probably a major, one of my major concerns, is the safety of our kids before and after school during pickup. Because our kids are picked up on the street. We don't have any off-site pickup, so the kids are picked up on the street, and as we move forward, that is something that we continually have to struggle with.
So one of the pieces that you noticed that Linda and other principals will be talking about is kind of that right-sizing, trying to get, because of the overall congestion within the building, how do you have a building that can operate effectively and efficiently for the right number of students? And there's no perfect number.
Mm-hmm. But this building, right now, this will fit four sections at every level. And this is, like, as I said, really, this is the first year we've ever had only four sections at each level. If we go to five sections in the future, we have to take a look at making some changes. That's given that we do not have a full-day kindergarten. So we are full. We have GECRC storage in here. Our book room is in here. It's our teacher's workroom, where we take their break. We're using every space. We feel we try to utilize every space the best that we can. So now what would happen if we put in a full-day kindergarten? How would that impact our building and the space that we have? So when we kind of play around with this, where would they go? It makes most sense for us to put our full-day kindergarten right down here by the other two kindergartens. We would shift then our level three lids over to this room here. This is where our music and art rooms were. And so our music and art rooms would move back to these small classrooms here. These are undersized classrooms. We've had art and music here before. My special concern is the art room is being so small, and with all the tables in there, it makes it very difficult for kids to move around. If our class sizes were to increase at all, I would be concerned about them being able to fit in that room, actually. Our music room is also a small, undersized classroom. One of the things that we're really working towards is a lot of movement, a lot of the instruments being used in the music classroom. That is a huge concern. I'm not sure if we'll be able to do that. We would lose space for, we would have no space for teachers to collaborate and to work together. No planning room, because every room in the building would be used. If we had an additional section at any level, kindergarten through grade five, we would not be able to do it. We would have to increase class sizes. That is the only way that it would fit. We would not be able to provide lunch in the gymnasium for one section of our kids. Maybe it's kindergarten, maybe it's level three, whichever it is. They would have to eat somewhere else. And when we're looking at that eating in a shared instructional space, that's a huge concern because of the number of kids that have some serious food allergies. Where would we put those children? Some people would say, well, why don't you just put why don't you just put lunch in here and in here? Well, yeah, we could do that. But what would happen then, we have to shut down this gymnasium 20 minutes before lunch and then keep it shut down 30 minutes after lunch, as well as this. With the addition of PE for four full-day kindergarten sections, it's very highly, you know, I played with it a little bit. I don't know if it's possible to be able to provide, shut these gyms down and be able to provide full-day daily PE to all of our students. So that would be something we could play with. But then what also would happen, and even more possible, what would happen then is our PE, our space, would drive our instructional program. We would have to use where we can fit people in and then figure out how then we could build our instructional schedule around our space. As I said earlier, we have no space for our living coach, our PBL coaches. They would have no office space at all within this building. We could make it happen, but we would have a larger class size in the event that we would have additional kids coming in.
larger class sizes just if you had a fifth section or for something else?
If we had a fifth section.
That's the only thing that would drive larger class sizes.
Would drive, right. We would not be able to put a fifth section in of any grade level at all. Some of our class sizes are all already relatively large. It's pretty tight. It's tight already currently. It will be tight after construction is done. We move our kids inside. This would make it almost, it would be very difficult to do the kinds of things that we would like to do in school. I mean, it would be difficult to pull teachers together anywhere in the building to work and plan together. So, and I think, you know, it seems really negative. I when I was thinking about this and presenting what would happen, I thought, this is so negative and it's so unlikely. I have to be joyful. I have to be glad that we're getting these four extra classrooms. I mean, the other thing to point out is that we do get four extra classrooms. However, we lost 103 as a full-size classroom. I think that's important to note. In order to build this hallway in here, this now becomes a small group instructional space. So we can no longer use that for a full-size classroom. So that's where we're at.
And then that rotunda, there's no chance to reconfigure that for...
You know what? It could be something that's done eventually. In this round area here, these are all small groups. A lot of special ed rooms are around here. We've got our copy room in here, which is, you know, basically two copiers and a big mailboxes and a table to work on. Our conference room is doubling up as our records room. We do not have a secured records room. We won't even after this new... And it doubles up as our records room, our assistant principal's office, and our conference rooms, which we use for our special ed meetings and any other meetings where parents come in. And then my office. And then we have our secretary's office, administrative assistant's office. It's not a really functional space. It's one of these small areas. There's not a lot of room even for them to work. The other thing I need to point out, too, is the band. I would be in big trouble if I didn't say this for my band and orchestra. This space right here doesn't work for them. There's two exits and entrances which cannot be blocked. They are in there with kids and instruments and stands, and I don't even know how they do it, but I have to give them heads up. They're doing a really good job with the space they have, and they were hoping to be able to eventually move into another space, but that's not going to be possible.
One question about your lunchtime concern.
Yeah.
Does your second gymnasium have a kitchen?
It has a small kitchen right here. It's not...
Okay, there it is.
You see this little kitchen right here? That's where our hot lunch stuff is stored. You know, it's no longer a kitchen any longer. And then while they are preparing, while they're still having gym, all of it's in this hallway here. And they have to move that out in order to get in there to prepare food. The problem here is we do have a small kitchen right here, but it's also used for... we have a Y program after school that rents out our space for kids. It's that their storage. And it will be when it becomes, if we have a full-day kindergarten, this kitchen becomes an office area for our two class teachers. And we will no longer be able to use the storage for the library. So it would be like using all of your space in any creative way you can to make it all fit.
The second plan, I don't know where you're doing lunch. So.
Yeah, you know what? We'd have to be in a classroom. It would require more staff. But then my concern is when you are in a shared instructional space, those kids come in and out. If one kid has peanut butter or one kid has milk, and it's left somewhere in that room, there is always that worry. You know what's going to happen. So you know you have to be very, very cautious, or you just say no peanut butter, no, you know, whatever the concerns are in that room. You got to tell parents you can't have it. So. Yeah. You know, and this, the whole safety of kids in the front of the building is compounded when you've got all your kindergartners leaving and coming at the same time. I mean, the little guys, you know, they haven't learned how you can't go between parked cars as much as some of the older kids, which we still have to remind them not to go between parked cars. That's Lincoln School. So thank you for the addition. And I'm sorry to share that we're still tight.
We're still tied up.
Yeah.
These buildings are overtaxed already. I just want to frame something you said, because I know that we've talked about this before, and that is, you said your space starts to drive instruction versus instruction driving space. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's flipped in terms of what we want to be able to do. So I want to, I heard that, and I just want to reinforce that as well. And I don't hear you saying it's not an excitement about an all-day kindergarten program. It's the reality of a building that's already under constraints that can be used, and then trying to be creative and doing the kind of things that we want as a district and as parents and community to have, which is music programs and our requirements of, you know, PE and all those things.
PBL.
Yeah.
And thank you for reminding me, because my first line on that part when I got to this slide was supposed to be, as an instructional leader, I strongly believe in Fergan full-day kindergarten. Yeah. But I do. And what makes it really hard is when I look at this and the feasibility of it happening within my building and how it's going to impact, how it would impact all of us, all the rest of the kids in the building.
I'm sorry.
No, go.
Oh, please.
No.
I just don't want to lose the key takeaways, which, again, you know, goes back to these charts, right? I saw that posted somewhere. I'd say, okay, here's how we're doing full-day kindergarten.
You won't see that posted.
Right. So I just want to make sure that the for you or for me, the key takeaway should be, if we did full-day kindergarten in our existing infrastructure today, the key changes that will occur is that music and art will go into undersized rooms.
And they've been there before. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to say they haven't, but
right.
with the way our program is changing,
mm-hmm.
and what we're really trying to do, it makes it difficult.
Okay,
so
the other one was, and you don't have to, I just want to make sure I've got them captured.
Yeah. Cause,
so the other one is the teacher collaboration space goes away.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do a 5-section without increasing targets.
Right.
Lunch period, sounds like you said there'd be one period that's out.
There would be some group of kids that won't fit in the lunch room.
And when we say a group, does that mean
it would be like it would be like right now we are.
Does that mean like
a level? Like kindergarten.
Four classrooms?
A whole full class.
Yeah,
100 plus kids.
Okay, that's what I was trying to understand.
Yeah.
And then, there's a PE challenge for providing it to full day for kindergartners.
That would be intact, especially if we have to use both.
Right. Are we required to provide PE by law for kindergartners? Not saying we wouldn't. I'm just asking, is it a requirement?
Not on a daily basis. You can get a waiver for kindergartners for PE, but I don't know. You know, I don't know if I would want to do that because we've got these little kids that are. The guys that are having a hard time sitting in their seats right now, you want them out active so they can then turn around, come back to the classroom, and do some learning.
And then the last one was, seems like the pickup gets even more. Did I miss any?
It becomes more of a safety issue.
Yeah. Did I miss any?
The one thing that I probably didn't elaborate too much on, that when we lose the space for our specialists, along with that space becomes all their professional materials that are shared, that we don't have in every single classroom, but we want to have a couple of books, a couple of many types of books that teachers can check out and have. There's no room for those materials now within our building. We can divvy them out amongst classroom teachers, but when you divvy out a book, you know, who has it? And when you need it, where do you go, and how do you access it? So, there you go.
Can I ask a question? Would you give up green space for classroom space?
The problem that we have at Lincoln is that the whole backfield floods every time it rains. I don't know if we're on a floodplain back there. And then we've got that retention water over. I don't know what green space I'd give up.
It would be the playground, or my
blacktop area. That would be the only place.
But if we could get rid of it, if we could solve that problem.
You know what? If that was the only alternative, I'd say yes. But then I feel like I'm sacrificing an important part of the day of kids' recess and the kids' PE outside.
And it's still taxing the building. You're still adding those kids to a building that's overtaxed.
We still have one music, one art, those kinds of a small lunchroom space. But if we had to build out back there, I would probably lose the playground area space. But
so where the portables are now, is that green space that we're...
Where the portables are now, that area, when we had portables there before, even, you know, that was...
So that green, that's not that's green space that we have taken away for a decade or so.
Yeah, it's been gone for a long time. And that's higher level ground than all the rest of the playground. The rest of the playground is very low, and there's a lot. There's actually some sewers back both and back in there to retain the water, to have the water drain. There's not, I don't know if there's buildable land there other than that up next to that person's property there where those portables are currently.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is Franklin School. I'm Kurt Samples. Again, want to say thank you very much to the board. Our current project is really cool. The classrooms that are going in, and one thing that Linda didn't mention, but as the spring this year rolls around and the storm season rolls around, it gives us a lot of comfort as a principal to know that we're going to be able to bring those kids into our building under brick and mortar. We always have plans to bring them into the building if there's ever inclement weather. But it's just a good thing to have them into our solid building versus where they're at now. So this is, our portables are currently out here in the back. And so these are our new classrooms at Ben Franklin School. And this is our current configuration. Some of what Linda said in terms of loading up our school, the original Franklin School is like right here. This is very front part. And, 85 years ago, this was the neighborhood school. All the children walked. There was about 200 of them or so. And now we have almost 600 on the same site, but we built a lot of extra space onto it and to the west of it for students and teachers to work. So our new classrooms, our STEAM classrooms are back here. Those will be level 3 STEAM. Level 3 STEAM is currently in the second floor of the building. And so when the construction project is done and they move in there over the holiday break this year, then that will vacate some classrooms on the second floor of Franklin, and the students are, the faculties that are currently in the portables will move into those second floor classrooms, those literacy classrooms. You can see from this diagram, art is currently down here in this space. Last year, there is a movable wall dividing us into two kind of smaller spaces, and art and music share the same space. What's kind of a drawback in this design is that they also share just one door to the building. And so, as long as we've been able to have a schedule that was that worked in terms of getting students in and out, we've been able to have our students enter and go into art and music at the same time and leave at the same time. But if that schedule is staggered at all, it presents a big problem if we have music here and art here, because students would have to be passing through that classroom during a passing period. Because art and music have different amounts of time during the day, that has a high probability of becoming a problem in the future. Again, I don't want to pile on too much on what Linda was saying, but some of our constraints, this is currently our lunchroom, and so we have a limited amount of time that we can spend with indoor gym because of the fact that you have to have at least 30 or 40 minutes ahead of lunch and then about the same on the other side in order to prepare that space and then clean it up afterwards.
So you're doing lunch in the gym now, not in the multi-purpose room?
That's correct.
And is the multi-purpose room used at all for lunch? Or?
It is used some. We have what we call a quiet lunchroom in there. We pull down a couple of tables, and students that benefit from having a quieter space during that time eat lunch in there. Also, our band and orchestra is on our stage this year. So while it's great for a performance space, it's not the best instructional space in terms of ventilation and lighting and so forth. So we're struggling with that a little bit this year. Again, the office space, the conference, especially the conference room and the assistant principal and all of our records are in one space there. Our copiers and everything are pretty much in the hallway here between the offices, and that's kind of one of our teacher work areas.
As long as you have that up, in your report to us, you showed us a room that had electrical mechanical pattern. Mm-hmm. Panels that you're using. Where is that?
That's right here. That's one of our in-out classrooms. I'm not sure what I think that as they added on to the building, they thought that that was a good location to put a lot of those mechanicals in there. So there are mechanical electrical panels along the walls in there. We keep them locked all the time, but it's not ideal for instruction space. Okay, so old building, lots of nooks and crannies. We're using all of our nooks and crannies in terms of office space and space for people to be able to work with students and small groups and so forth. Oh, I also want to mention that Franklin is traditionally, or has been in the 8 years that I've been there, it's a four-section school. It's been pretty much four sections. We've had a couple of doubles. Actually, my very first year, we were four sections the year before I got there, and then expanded to six sections of first grade. And that was a difficult process to reorganize all of those students. That's why I remember so well. We have had bubbles come through and work their way up. But right now we're at four section, and kind of an anomaly, we do just have three sections of fourth grade this year. They're large sections, but we have three sections of fourth grade that we can do. So that's the first floor. We go to the second floor. Again, this will be what we have next year, our literacy classrooms. This is the second floor of the building. Our STEAM classrooms class here. This classroom right here is a larger size classroom, and we've got it divided by kind of a hanging cloth curtain. On this side of it is a teacher workroom where we have our laminator machines and all the other materials, die cut machines, things that teachers use in order to prepare instructional materials. We also have our refrigerators, microwaves, and a small table for staff to eat in. So our staff really eat their lunch in this room each day. So it's kind of our break room, work room. And then we also use that space. We call it our STEAM lab. And it provides us a flexible space that students use and teachers use during the day. If they have some larger projects going on, for instance, today we had student groups in there vetting their TVLs with parents all day long. So it allowed us a flexible space for students to get out of their classroom and to have an additional space in order to do that work. We've had lots of presentations in that room, and so it's a space that has worked out well for us. I also said the music had moved upstairs this year. This is a small classroom. I think it's only about 550 square feet or so. Where a typical classroom right now, I think it's about 700 or something like that. It's a little larger. Okay, and then if we have full day kindergarten.
So can I just don't want to lose it, but it sounds like in your current structure with the addition, your challenges, like I didn't hear bathrooms, hallways, all that, you know, pick up and all that. It sounds like your challenges are band and orchestra, music, and then teacher workspace. If you didn't have full day kindergarten, those seem to be your key challenges right now.
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. But with that configuration, does it allow us to still keep that STEAM? You know, without full day kindergarten, we are able to still keep the STEAM lab and teacher workroom and so forth. Okay, so then add full day kindergarten, and basically we put it in those two, what are currently level two literacy classrooms. Our other level two literacy classrooms are here and here. So we put our other kindergarten classrooms there. These teachers and students would then be upstairs. So we put them into this smaller classroom that's currently our music room. And we have had a class of students in there several years ago. But again, it's a small space. And then we would also lose our STEAM lab staff workroom, staff break room area. We'd have to do something. I don't know whether we could put in a temporary wall or something. Basically, I couldn't think of another place in the building where we would put our refrigerator and microwave so the teachers could keep their lunch cold during the day. So we need to have some place to do that. So So that pretty much blows up the second floor.
For teen resource, did you say that from the fourth floor here, speech and hearing and social worker?
This is on the second floor. This is where a resource piece of work with small groups of students. Again, it's not a good instructional space. There's a table here that pretty much takes up this entire area. This is our elevator, and elevator noise that comes from that mechanical closet during the day that the elevator can use. So it's not a great space, and it could not be a classroom. It's probably only about 300 square feet.
How much is that courtyard utilized?
The courtyard? This one?
Yeah.
How much is it utilized?
Could it be in play? Could it be in play?
Or filled out?
Could we turn that into an indoor space? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah.
It's a possibility. We do use it for an outdoor space. We have a deck built in there now. And teachers and students go out there. We're using, we have some garden beds down here now that we've been using with students. We had a school garden plant this past fall. So we use it. I mean, when the weather's nice, teachers will take their students out there. I'd say probably, 25% of the time during the day on nice days, they'll be out there, which they're not out there when it's cold or rainy or anything like that.
Could you tell us, what else do you do in a multi-purpose room? How much is that for you, students? How flexible could that be?
Yeah, it is an overflow for the gymnasium. So that with our schedule currently, our gymnasium is of the size that you can get two classes in there. So we double up our classes and have 50 to 60 students in there at the same time. If those students are all fifth graders or all level three, fourth and fifth graders, or they're a mixture of like second and third graders, that's okay. The gym teachers can work with that and have all the students engaged in an activity or game that those students can play. But if the schedule dictates that we have to have a level three class and a first grade class at the same time, you really can't have all the students in that space. So one of the gym teachers, rather than working with that group, will take classes in there and work with them. Other than that, we just use it as a flexible space. Teachers have large projects that they're working on that they can take them down there. Last year, our level two students constructed like a community in their social studies unit that they laid out on the floor, and we were able to lay that out for a couple days. And so it's used as a flexible learning space in that way. It's also used for our YMCA program in the morning and the afternoon right after school.
So again, trying to understand your challenge, if I went to full-day kindergarten at Ben Franklin, what I think I heard you say was that art and music are now combined into 109 A and B, which my recollection is they were like that for years anyway.
Yes.
Right? I mean, it's not ideal, but
right. We,
as a district, we lived with that for many years. And your other challenge is you're turning one of the literacy classrooms upstairs into, I'm sorry, the music room that went down to the art room becomes a classroom.
Correct.
And that is an undersized class, 600-some square feet, as opposed to the 700-some square feet.
Yes.
Those are your two challenges.
And the loss of that flexible, that STEAM lab with the teacher workroom and the teacher break.
So you lose the STEAM lab. And is this configuration under the assumption that you have a three-section fourth grade or a three-section any grade? Or
no,
is this... This assumes four no matter what.
This is four.
But you can't accommodate five without additional raising the target.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Scott, are you up with Churchill?
Here you go. I want to take Scott Clusters. Churchill, and I want to take a little bit of a different approach from my standpoint, because I've got the dual language program in my building that as we talk about sections, we talk about numbers moving forward, I do know that the dual language program will continue to grow. So what you're looking at here is just, this will be next year when our addition is completed, and the green area shows
the new areas that have been added. And this essentially does a couple of things. It replaces the North Portable, which will be gone, and we'll have the STEAM classrooms that will be here. And this space here that is currently a music room and an art room that's divided with a wall is going to be reconfigured as part of the construction as well, so that we'll have a music space and we'll have an art space. And so we're thankful to have those a little bit larger spaces that we have been tightly confined over the past few years with that. They have the same challenges as the other buildings. Corridor space in terms of having 600 students moving at any one time. One of the main areas that we see is right here as we have students coming from this part of the building, trying to get to the lunchroom and the gymnasium, kids leaving the lunchroom, gymnasium, leaving the art room, coming down the hallways, everything. I call it the hillside strangler for those of you who are struggling at all. And you know what that's like, and why everything just kind of comes together. It kind of happens right there for us. And so, but this will be what the building will look like. We do use we have tables in our gymnasium that we use. We have half of our students eating in the gym and half of our students eating in the multi-purpose room while students are, and then we flip them. And so right now I have first graders, all of first grade and two second grade classes that eat in the multi-purpose room. The rest of second grade and third grade eat in the gym while my fourth and fifth graders are outside. And then we flip them and have fourth grade in the multi-purpose room and fifth grade in the gym while the rest of them. And so one of the reasons we did that was two serving stations to be able to get kids through the line quicker. I have a number of students that get the hot lunch program as a result of the demographics of my school, and so that was necessary for us to use both of those spaces. To answer a question that came up before, multi-purpose room is used for kindergarten PE 2 days a week in the morning and in the afternoon. We have a before and after school park district program called Adventure Time that uses that space as well. And then we use it for lunch for a majority of the day, and then it's an extra space. I will have teachers from time to time say, can I get into the multi-purpose room? I need to spread kids out. Can I use that space? And we use it that way. Gymnasium is used all day long. Actually, I have, with the number of sections that I have, I don't have enough time in my day for my PE teachers to actually teach the kindergarten students. We hire a kindergarten teacher that comes in for the 2 days a week to be able to meet the kindergarten need for my building. So this will be the structure for next year. Next year, the dual language program will move up to second grade. And so we will have two classes of dual language second grade that will be there. And we will have one section of bilingual third grade. And it will be in the front portables here. And as we roll forward, Mike, if you want to go ahead. Well, any questions about that for next year that I can answer? Just kind of give you the lay of the land of what it is.
So your challenges, again, for Churchill after phase one is the hillside strangler and lunch.
Yeah, and I'm going to go back, when we talk about staff space, we never have. My 10 years there. 1 year we used this special ed room before we needed it as a lounge space. My very first year, this OTPT room here was a place where people could eat lunch. We have refrigerators and microwaves kind of spread out throughout the building where people can kind of go, but my staff eats in their room. And so, it's what they do. It's just kind of what we do, what we have to do. And so,
those are your challenges. You don't have the drop-off issue, the bathrooms, the green space.
Well, if you've ever driven past my school in the morning or after school, I apologize for the traffic flow outside. But no, being on Geneva Road, we have the issues that come with just
sure being on a busy street.
But around the building itself,
yeah.
No.
I mean, you're going in.
We're pretty comfortable. Yeah. Okay. No, we're pretty comfortable with that. I think we do that pretty well.
Okay.
And for parking, do you have parking issues at all?
Parking is tight. It's tight, but we, especially on days that we have special events and if we have anything going on, if we have parents in the building at all, a week and a half ago when we had our Halloween festivities and I had staff park at the church down the road and walk over. I had about 75% of my staff that did that so we could free up the parking lot for parents who were coming in for parties to be able to have a space. We knew that they were carrying things and doing those kinds of things. So there are times when parking is an issue. Is it an everyday issue? No. In the winter time when we clear the lots and you don't quite get all the snow pushed off and you have like those corner we lose spaces in the winter time. But it's a challenge, but again, we work with it.
If I can just comment on the Geneva Road piece, just this last week, there was a parent from Churchill, she's actually here, who contacted me, and then we met with Bob Cicerella about sidewalk from Glencoe up that's not been completed yet, and Bob's working on that with IDOT. But she had gone, and this is a perennial, this is an age-old issue for Churchill. I mean, even when my kids were there 12 years ago and 85 years ago, the response from the Glen Allen police, which was, you know, for them reasonable, was don't back up on Geneva Road, go around the block and come around again, or park on Elm, which creates more backup because there's no parking restriction on either side of Kenilworth. So you've got cars on both sides, which I think is a huge hazard in terms of fire protection, those type of things. So it's not a, it's a specific amount of time, but it's an ongoing issue that we're, you know, trying to you know, take a look at from a county perspective, because it's a county road, snow perspective. So the backup on Geneva is not a small thing, and you know, so we're looking at that. But I'm glad you brought it up, John, because I think it's important.
We do also want to point out we have a map lab here where we have. Small groups of students come to receive a little bit of
at my age, I thought you said best lab.
Where's that coming from?
Steve? Right. Sorry about that.
No problem. We have a map room. How's that?
Yeah, that's better.
Where I do house my literacy coach, my math coach, and also my when the PBL coaches are in the building, they use that space. But it's a combination work combination office space for them, and also a place where we work with students. The ENL room here, room 101, I have four ENL teachers, and at any time if you were to go in there, all four of them could be working with anywhere from, there could be 20 to 25 students in the room, plus four teachers as well, working in small groups, but we kind of sectioned off. And then we also have this room here, which is a combination. I have a research teacher who works with students there. I also have it's a place for my FLUS teacher, foreign language, and also for, I've got a bilingual interventionist who works with the bilingual dual program that is in that space as well. So just a couple spaces I want to point out as I move forward, because that would possibly shift a little bit. So
is ENL, is your ELL space a constraint today, or is it something?
It's not ideal.
It's not ideal.
There, I mean, if you go back for just a second, this is a larger room, and so I was able to put them in that space. Prior to that, they were in a smaller space, and it's very hard to for the kids to come in, focus, concentrate, but we make it work. Again, we put up kind of partitions and rolling cases and things that kind of block things off, and I think they make it work as best they can. Is it a constraint? Would I love to have more space? Absolutely. Do we make it work? Yes.
Okay.
And so
I'm just trying to differentiate your current configuration with full-day kindergarten. So I shouldn't look at your ELL space as a concern for you now in terms of delivering the...
Well, we've got the largest ENL population living in the school.
Right.
We've got the largest staff. And so, you know, four in one room is...
So assuming, let's just assume we weren't doing full-day kindergarten, should I as a board member be concerned about your ELL space in your current configuration? As insufficient,
it's insufficient
to deliver the services that you want.
It's insufficient.
Okay.
If you're going to ask the question, I'll say
yes. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as we move ahead to looking here, we add in. I'm not quite sure if these match up with where we were at, but dual language third grade gets added in a year's time, and so I don't know if this label got changed, but. Looking at when full day kindergarten would kick in, but I would move the dual language into these spaces. That space that was a resource room would become available for that dual language. This doesn't look at full day kindergarten yet, so this is kind of a mistake on the slide as we move forward. This is moving ahead of the year 16-17, as dual language rolls up. The math lab would go. Well,
now you're making fun of me.
Well, I'm making sure I'm. Clear. So, did we switch this one? Go forward one, please. No. All right, so my slides didn't all get in the presentation. The math lab would move out here. We've got kindergarten classrooms here. I'm sorry, things are not matching up like that.
Can I see the previous slide? Because the math lab is down in that little quadrant.
That's 15, 16.
This is 15, 16.
This is not full-day kindergarten.
Bilingual third grade is there. And I know that. So I know the bilingual third grade is there. And the next year, we roll forward.
This
one
doesn't
have
full-day kindergarten.
So this,
this does not. It says it does, but it does not.
Right. You're just
showing us
all
my slides. Yeah, I wanted to show you the dual language. I don't know it all
we'll
my slides.
So you have no issues then. Okay, good.
So, I can tell you that moving forward in 16, 17, we still wouldn't have a workroom, and I'm going to tell you all the way through we wouldn't have that, we wouldn't have a book. Third grade dual language would begin. That room where I had the FLESS teacher, resource teacher, coaches, interventionist, I would have to take those two spaces that are now from third. I keep talking. I apologize. It's getting late. Those two spaces that are for third grade dual, those were a combination of workspaces and office spaces, I would have to find an additional spot for those people somewhere within the building. I don't know where that spot would be. I would have to find that spot. It would have to be some kind of a combination of student workspace and office space. That only planning area we really have would be in my assistant principal's office or in my office, not to say that that couldn't be done, but it would do it. And if full-day kindergarten were to start, right now, I wouldn't have space for it based upon as things roll up in 16, 17.
So you're saying the key takeaway for you is you cannot do full day. Some of the other folks could squeeze it in. Mm-hmm. You're saying I can't even squeeze it in.
Not in, it depends on, I think your question is depends on when you would look to go with it. Because the numbers fluctuate in my building based upon I'm taking my current numbers and I'm rolling them forward. Mm-hmm. And I'm rolling them forward with dual language. This year, I couldn't do it. The year after that, I could do it, but I would need the portable classrooms to stay in order to make everything work. The year after that, when dual language is a full implementation in fifth grade, I wouldn't be able to do it.
Okay.
So could I consistently do it? No.
Okay. So that's, but I mean, that's the key takeaway.
Couldn't do it. Right.
That's the key takeaway, right, is that we would continue, as dual language continues to move up, my numbers are going to fluctuate. I would have to move some things around. But eventually, by the time dual language hits that point in the year 18-19 where we're at full dual language all the way through the building. If we were to be at full day kindergarten at Churchill, I would still need the portables. Those portables wouldn't go away. And I wouldn't have space for some of those people anywhere in the building tonight, so I'd have to figure out where that would go.
So your situation is unique because you have our current phase two would add another set of classrooms, and I'm wondering if we did this exercise with the phase two, the current phase two thinking, what that would do to your ability to provide full day kindergarten.
Well, would that phase two replace the front portable? I'm not touching this now. The front portable? Is that what it would replace, or would it be more?
Phase two is about bringing in another facility that would reduce the overall number of students at your school.
Part of phase two would be adding the additional classrooms, the additional.
No.
Replacing those portables.
Yeah, that's part of phase. That would be a current phase two.
No. That's a possibility when they built the, when they did these plans, that we were looking forward. And if referendum or if the board said not to go forward and you still wanted to get rid of all the portables, there is space there. They've created space that they could add another four classrooms there to just eliminate the portables. But that's not part of the current phase two, just to be clear.
So that's not part of your phase two recommendation?
Never was.
You have this, you're moving each year by year because of the dual language. Can you explain some of that detail? Because obviously some years you need an extra room because how dual language is being implemented.
I took dual language plus I took my current numbers. And just assuming that everything stayed the same, that I didn't add kids, that I didn't lose kids, because that's really what I have to work off because I don't know. And then just taking that and rolling it forward with the current class size targets that we have, if we were to keep those and to roll them forward, I look at, okay, this year I would need this number of sections for this grade, for these grade levels, and so then I tried to lay out my building all the way through, and I walked it all the way through the, over the next 5 years.
And that's because you have some five sections and some that aren't?
I do have some sections, yes.
And that's why there's the movement you're
right.
Right.
During
the
grade.
Okay. I thought... Okay.
Yeah. The constant, the one, the thing I can guarantee that's going to happen is I know that I have, I'm going to add a dual language section every year moving forward, which is going to be.
Does that add a classroom? A dual language, adding a dual language.
What do you mean add a classroom?
Well, if you're adding a dual language,
you have to take a classroom.
Does it require a classroom?
Requires a classroom. Yeah.
Right.
Over and beyond what it does today.
Yeah, because you have to have a unique dual language classroom to. Or second, third, fourth.
So this is where I'm stalled out here.
Yeah.
So follow me. If you have four classrooms today in third grade, okay, and you're going to add, or in second grade, you're going to add dual language the next year because you're moving up. So those four actually become five because of dual language?
Can you back me back up to the very first slide, Mike? So right now, I have five sections of first grade.
Okay.
Two of them are dual. Three of them are English classrooms.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got two dual language classrooms here, and I've got a first grade, and a first grade. Next year, those three first grade English classrooms are going to roll up, and they're going to become second grade classrooms with the other third grade. Okay, and so the dynamics there is that I have four sections of third graders and three sections of second graders, so that's going to create a seven. So seven sections there, which will, and then I'm still going to need the dual language classrooms to move forward. The next, I think the sticking point is the class size targets change going from third grade to fourth grade, and so that might then impact what you would need.
Because like, your duals are staying at lower classroom class.
Dual classrooms are. I mean, they're set in terms of where they are. I know I need space for them, no matter whether there's 10 kids in the room or there's.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm not following.
That's okay.
They're like a cohort, so they're locked up with each other. So my kids are in there at first grade. They go second duals, third dual. All those same kids move together. It's like a pipeline.
Sure, but you're not adding a classroom. Not unless you're changing the sections per grade.
You look at total number of sections, and I don't have those numbers in front of me of what it would be. I'm around 28 or 29 sections. Some years I'm going to be at 28, some I'm going to be at 29.
And what I'm trying to break down, I'm sorry, Scott.
No, that's good.
Is it because of dual language, or is it just because you have sections moving out and maybe moving in because
right,
of
right.
That's because I see this as if you're at 3 and 2 split, you're gonna have those two moving up, you're gonna have those three moving
right.
up. So I don't see it as a dual language creating a classroom need.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So right now there's no bilingual fourth and fifth grade.
Right.
No,
I think that's
third
the key.
Grade. So as dual moves up, then you really need two classrooms dedicated to dual, and you didn't have bilingual.
So at steady state, when we're doing dual language across all grades, as we're clawing up now, in steady state, you will need two extra permanent dual language classrooms. Is that kind of what we're saying?
Yeah, at full implementation of dual, we need that you'd have three English at every grade level and two dual. So it'll be a five section.
So you, what dual language did then is if you had a four section, because your numbers, you really forced it into a 3-2.
Into a five section.
Into a five section. Right. Three, two, sorry.
And you always had kids who exited bilingual at third, and then they became part of the English only classes, and that's where that would
right.
increase class sizes, and that's why last time he went to kind of those 4-5 sections. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I didn't
mean
to interrupt.
No,
that helps.
That helps. Okay. Yeah. And I don't know if it's correct to say this, but I think when we visited schools, as they go up, the numbers in the classroom shrink because some kids drop out. So the classroom size can be a little smaller and can fit into a smaller space. Is that a correct statement?
It can be.
I don't know if it works.
Spanish speakers can get smaller,
right.
But we haven't seen that trend yet.
Yeah, okay, so that's what I was going to ask. So we haven't seen that yet.
Okay. Well, I think we have to caution ourselves saying you can have a smaller room because, you know, we just heard Scott say that even for our EML, we're potentially putting at any given time four teachers with 25 children in a space where we've got, like, Lincoln in that, what's that called?
Rotunda?
Yeah, the rotunda space, you know, with social workers. With, you know, so we're already disadvantage in terms of kind of the right kind of space to be using too. That's what I'm hearing, Louise. Those are good questions, though, Joe. I get it.
So you're saying you can't do full day kindergarten in your building with the facilities you have? That's the key takeaway.
Consistently, no.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
About, yeah.
All right. Thanks, sir. Mayor?
Mary Horn, I'm the principal at Forest Glen. And I also want to thank the board for the four additional classrooms. It's always wonderful when we can get all of the children under one roof. We currently have go between three and four sections of classes. It depends how, you know, the bubbles go through. Usually, a lot of times when they go from third to fourth, when the target goes a little bit higher, the class size guideline will lose a section there. I do house the most of the preschool for the district. So I have two sections of blended, two sections of self-contained, and then I also house the EC structured class. All of those classrooms have bathrooms in them. We do a lot of potty training, and that's very helpful. Right now, we are grouped when we went to the structure of being content specialized. We did restructure the building to get the content specialized people all in the same area. So we have our K's and 1's in here, our 2, 3 in here, and then our 4, 5 in here. So when we did that, we did a lot of moving, but it was purposeful moving to kind of line us up. Our hallways are also strained because we're all moving through here as we're going into the lunchroom. This is probably my little strangler areas right here. We do all eat in the lunchroom, in the multi-purpose room. That is our lunchroom. Our gymnasium space, our old gym space, is our indoor recess area. We currently have three grade levels that can eat in that area. With the four classrooms that we're adding in, we can fit all in the building very nicely. I can even move art, which is currently here in an undersized classroom, into a full-size classroom to get them a little more space. And I can also move the music to a larger space for next year, the way we're configured. Office space is a concern for us. There is no place to fill out paperwork, that kind of stuff. Fume folders are housed in my office, special ed records, and assistant principal office. It's a very tight area. In the basement, we do have a staff work room, break area, and also band and orchestra, so they are doing lessons around the lunch tables that are in there. And currently in the library space, we have a very small library, but we also house the book room in the library space as well. So that's current for next year.
So for you at this point, you have your constraints on the facility are hallway congestion and teacher workspace.
Teacher workspace, band and orchestra in the staff workroom is also a concern. If I add another section in for next year, I will have to move things around. Next year I'll only have six sections at level three fourth grades and three fifth grades. So if anything shifts there, we'll have to look at reconfiguring something. We're also able to house our Chris staff with a resource teacher, and then mathematics with a resource teacher as well.
Do you also have congestion and drop off and pick up?
Yes, very much so. We have one little area where we can get off street for about seven car lengths, and we all funnel in that way, and you can't get out until you get into that seven space drop off area.
And the CSO is your other drop
space. Yeah, and the CSO parking lot is also a nice, yes, friendly area to pick up your child.
Yes.
If you're looking for an off-site.
Yes.
talked, you had done all the principals, and thank you for this, but had done the narrative on the space a couple of weeks ago, two or more. And you're talking here about bathroom space. So
yeah, we currently don't have enough bathroom space. And we have six classrooms that feed into all of this. Feed into this toilet area. This whole area feeds into this. And then we have one toilet area here that can be moved into. So yeah, it's, especially at this end of the building, it's very tight.
And then we're adding the addition down there, so they'll be also then accessing those.
Yeah, but they currently access them because that's the only place for when they're in the portables for them to access. So we have been working with that configuration for a long time. Okay, and then moving forward with full-day kindergarten, it does start to get tight. We do have to change up some of our configuration areas for that. The following year, I will go to 7 sections of level 3 and 7 sections of level 2. So now I'm having, you know, a more classroom needs. If anything splits, I get even tighter. And I never know when the splits are coming for our building. So we can get... now I'll have to put both resource teachers together. I'll have to move Chris into the library. For our reading interventions, they'll have to move into that space. I won't be able to accommodate that in a small group space. I can't put 4 kindergartens. Now I have to split up my first grade, and they would use some interior rooms in the library area. Art would have to move back to the small space, as would music. To accommodate and get all of the level 2 literacy and STEAM in, and then all the level 3, and then I would have to move at AEC to the basement. It's a very small space. It's probably less than 200 square feet. She's been in there before, but it's really tight.
What does that space look like? Because I haven't been there for a while. Is there, I remember was there when it flooded once or twice over the last few years. I know there's a kitchen area. It's below ground level. So there's, you have some windows right in the top.
It's like garden level. You know, you've got a little,
it's a really nice way to say it.
a little window space in there. So downstairs right now, I have my mathematics lab with a resource teacher down there currently. Yeah. It's just a narrow small group space. Also in that, so I would have to put math, PBL, band and orchestra, and my literacy coach into the staff workroom. We would lose a workroom for in that scenario.
Is that the only workroom?
I do have in the copy room, we do have a little counter space where we can store some paper. And
there's not a workspace.
No, it's just a countertop.
Yeah.
But it's not a workspace.
And here's your art being housed in room 136.
That's where it currently is. That's where it's been the whole time I've been there. Okay. So, I mean, it's really undersized for that space. And music works in the smaller space, but again, you know, it's undersized for what it should be to get all the movement in that we want kids to be doing and all the instrument spaces. I would have to also relook at lunch because I currently have for second and third eating together and then fourth and fifth. When you add kinder in, I cannot fit 4 classrooms into 1 lunchroom. So I would have to look at how I configure lunch, probably having first or kinder eat either in their classrooms or move them to eat with fourth and fifth graders in order to get them into that that space, because I still have to have 107 if we're indoor for recess. That's the only space I have to go for indoor recess.
So Mary, I should be able to tell this by looking at the chart, but I just want to confirm, are you assuming 4 sections at every grade when
no,
you do
I
this?
No, I have 7 sections at level 2 and 7 at level 3, because when I roll my numbers up, if I become a true 4 section building, I can't fit it.
Right. So you're basically assuming sort of the trend you have now.
Yeah,
which
I'm assuming the trend that these bubbles are going to keep coming through.
Which is probably more of a recent trend than a long-term trend.
Right, because we have had as many as five sections since I've been there, and multiple fives.
So, I wonder what this would look like if we assume four section.
If we assume four at short two rooms.
So you would say you would not be able to do full-day kindergarten in your building, assuming four sections. Would
assuming
that be
four sections, I could not.
You could not do it.
No.
Any other questions for Mary? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So part of this is really to demonstrate to the board where the facilities are at, that we do believe without full-day kindergarten that our facilities are overstrained, and by adding more students, it only exacerbates the situation. Don't believe by adding more, continue to keep portables or add more classrooms to these schools is a great solution to this problem. I think we've got to solve the problem and look at the priorities the board set forth a while ago around right-sizing the schools. I think that's an important piece. I think that's what you heard from the principals tonight is, how do we right-size these schools? Not adding more classrooms, adding more classrooms on, but what you'll see over time, if the board gives me direction in the coming weeks, bring you forward, what do these schools look like with full-day kindergarten, with kindergarten taken out, or if there was a K-5 school, and you'll see how they lay out and how these schools actually operate really well. And it gives our schools some flexible spaces. Those are the pieces you heard here tonight. There's no flexibility. So if the numbers go up one way or the other, you're stuck. That's not what we should be doing. So we've talked about one of the board's priorities around right-sizing. One of those other is the removal of portables. So we still have that with Churchill. We need to finally remove those last portables over at Churchill. One way of doing that is by taking on those recommendations for phase two that were brought forward last year, but that we want to continue to vet and look at possibly two solutions that we would bring forward to the board. So hopefully that's what we were able to present to you. I really appreciate the principals coming out tonight and walking through it, because no one knows the buildings better than our principals. I could have been up there, but I would not have been able to answer the questions the way they did and be able to walk you through the building. So thank you so much for your time. And ultimately, we still have Hadley. We haven't forgotten about Mr. Dively. He'll be back. but that's another piece of this elimination of all portables is for Hadley. And what are we doing there? So we'll continue the conversation.
Yeah. Well, this is about full-day kindergarten, right? So
yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
We didn't give him his chance, and he would ask for even more space.
He's shaking his head. So I'll bring this back to the board in 2 weeks.
Great. I just have one last piece about the all-day kindergarten. I know that one other part of the survey was about cost. Mm-hmm. And so the feedback on that, and then what you found in the interim, because I know you're still looking at
mm-hmm.
that, what the other feeder districts are doing and the options for that. So that'll be a finance piece of this, too.
Thank you.
So I think, just so we're all clear, right? Right now you're asking for MGM to go put together a facilities solution, if you will, to implementing full-day kindergarten.
One of those already done.
We have one of those completed. At least that's my understanding.
Correct.
And then you threw out this early childhood center. So I think as a board we need to discuss that, because we kind of, to quote that, we that train left the station. We did not think that was a solution in a previous meeting. So I think we should talk about that, or see if there's another option that we want to explore.
Well, I brought that up earlier this year, but then in July again.
Right.
just from the perspective of the size of the space. So I'm happy that we're going to at least bring it resurrected to see, especially based on what we see.
I think we need to decide if we're going to resurrect it, because I think the board said that was not something we wanted to pursue. So, I mean, we're going to spend money to do this, so the more options we have, the more money it will be, I assume, right?
Yeah, I would like to
give
this to those two
dollars at this point for the,
for what they'll charge us.
Well, so right now we have a we have a solution for this. That's
the
building a new school at
K-5. Correct.
So you don't need more money for that.
Nope.
So you need money now to go
to study the
explore something else, which you threw on the table. The childhood center. Is there another option that other people, like, you know, that other people would want to consider, or is that even an option worth spending money on?
I was wondering, is it possibly, can we look to see if, I don't know what the term would be, Jack, to kind of square in some of these circles, like, the configurations of our schools are all, I don't even know what
shapes
they are.
It's inefficient.
Yeah.
Well, so the option of could we do it within the existing facilities,
right,
doing reconfiguration.
Reconfiguration, like...
So you would add more students to your school, so you would not take care of the right-sizing piece.
That goes against the con of that is the right-sizing, which we could all say we can...
Is not a... Yeah, because that's what I'm working off of, where the board priorities around right-sizing the schools.
But right-sizing is making
core
sure
spaces.
We have enough space for the kids that are there.
We say it as core spaces, hallways, bathrooms,
right,
lunchrooms.
No, and so what I'm saying is, let's just... Churchill, let's just get rid of the meth lab, and we just...
What, are you kidding me?
We just put a, you know, I don't know, put a wall here. I don't know. I'm just saying, if Jack can use his ingenuity to put a wall here or something like that and add more spaces here, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
And
that would be Ron, right?
Ron. Or, Kurt, you know, this corridor, you know, is there, can we put three or four spaces here?
So it goes back to the goal of right sizing. To me, a third.
Yeah.
To me, an option would be to look at the existing facilities to see if we can do it. I would agree with that,
mm-hmm.
but it goes back to the right sizing.
Yeah,
of the board.
That's what we discussed in the workshop, was reconfiguring certain spaces that are inefficiently designed right now. If you make them into classrooms, you are still going to have lunch room issues. You're still going to have bathroom issues. You're still going to have gym issues, let alone adding more students with these specialties, the art, the music, the band, the orchestra. You're not taking care of those problems with the reconfig, and that's why in our discussions we said, well, what's the ideal student body for these schools, giving the core spaces was around 450, maybe 475, and that's why we move forward with the plan that you have that is done by the architects for a new K through 5.
So
we did look at that, you know, a couple of reviews ago. So we'll use Lincoln for an example. So that whole round space is incredibly inefficient use of space. And so there was a plan presented to the board at the time, and the cost seemed prohibitive, and so that was pulled off the table. So it's not that there hasn't been some look at this. But what I'm not going to say this correctly, but I'll just try and follow me. I hear what you're saying, but I think what we're doing is we're on a hamster wheel conversation again. Because what we're still doing is trying to take space that is not built for 500 plus students. Certainly, none of these were. I mean, even looking at, like Kirk said, with Franklin, which was that baseline space built in 1920 plus. And then it's like adding Legos on to try and make it all work. The space is the space. And to some of the principal's comments also around green space, get, you know, outside space for the kids, all that. Could we build on every single square inch? Sure we could. But is that the kind of learning environment that's best for the kids? And so, I would not recommend doing that. Because I think where we are is really around this, going back to that master facility planning conversation, getting kids under roof, and also looking at how do you right-size space that was never meant to house this many kids. And no matter how creative we get, we're still using a footprint that was never meant to be, you know, the size that it is now. And this is not building for fixing now. This is building for the future, future changes in terms of programs and those initiatives. Certainly, dual language continues to do well at Churchill. There may be other schools that want to adopt that. I mean, we're trying to think future focus, not let's just fix this piece and move these two pieces around. At least that's my understanding of it.
And I think the core space is a key thing, along with what is happening on the outside. Forrest Glenn and Lincoln spoke of issues on pickup and drop off. If you add, you know, basically 50 more students each morning and 50 more each afternoon, that's a lot in those small areas. And I think that's why we always came back to the right sizing issue for these small little centers we have that we call K-5 units. I mean, schools.
I mean, I personally think it is worth exploring because, if I look at the themes that I heard, I think the themes I heard were the challenges with full-day kindergarten for all the buildings was music and art is a challenge, which maybe that can be fixed with some better configuration of space. I heard that lunch is an issue. You know, that could be fixed with some kids having lunch in the classroom. Teacher space is an issue. And there's some hallway congestion in two of the buildings. That's what I heard as common to everything. And then I heard one building say, I can't do full-day kindergarten no matter what. And then I heard another one say, I can't do it if I end up going all four sections. And when I look at those problems, I just think, well, gee, maybe if we're going to, I know we're going to spend, the way to fix this is to spend money at some point. So we can either fix it with a new facility or improving these, and maybe the cost of improving these would be significantly less than a new facility, which is something I think we ought to be aware of. But it does not address the right sizing. By right sizing, I mean whether it's right to have 650 kids in a building. Right? We could still address the infrastructure pieces, right? Like right there, Forest Glen, we could tack on some bathrooms, you know, with that addition. It's not even, you know, I mean, it's all possible, right? I mean,
Not all of it's possible. I would say that example is possible. Making your lunchroom suddenly bigger so you can do all that with full-day kindergarten would be prohibited. I do think one thing I will say is that information you're requesting, I'm not sure we have to go out and spend money to do it because it's been done. I think we just need to go back to those books that we got that stack about this high, go to the Lincoln where we tipped the rotunda and squared it off, and we review the data. Mm-hmm. And maybe redraw it and ask Linda to go back to the drawing board and say, okay, if I had that, this is how I would do full-day kindergarten. Now, we know it's not going to change Lincoln's drop-off and pick-up, not going to change their parking issues and all that, but it could take care of maybe 70% of the issues that Lincoln has. So, and we have costs for that. So reviewing that seems like the right thing to do. I wouldn't disagree with that because you don't have to go spend money to do it. We just have to go back and ask Bob to pull out those pertinent studies that would reconfigure those spaces at the schools that you guys listed.
And that could be a good place to start. I wouldn't disagree with that. I just think that some of those things were done under very different assumptions. I don't remember what all the assumptions were, but, you know, for example, those changes weren't under the assumption that we just added four classrooms, and they may have even been under the assumption that, you know, there's another building being built somewhere. I don't remember all the detail of them, but we could start there and then from there decide if we need some additional work done.
Right. I agree with that.
I think, if I recall, the only one we really got into any detail on with that was Lincoln, and then maybe at Churchill with that little triangle up front, but certainly not addressing the infrastructure issues within Forest Glen. In my mind, I think somehow we're going to have to spend money to get at least to a point where we can make a decision.
Yeah. And I just think the important thing is that if we're re-looking at that, and it was Churchill and Lincoln, that the two that we had studies on, that we're changing some of the direction, we are changing the direction that we may fall on the right size.
And then if
we that's fine to change your direction. It's just we need to make sure everyone knows that by doing
I just want to say one thing listening to the principals tonight, and that is that, I don't want to diminish some of what they weren't saying, which I think they were being kind, and that is that every year, depending on the flip in a class or higher level of first graders or a change in this, and we know there's all every year some blip in that, that they're still underserving some population or feeling like they're having to adjust without doing it in a way that would best serve that population. It disturbs me that at Churchill we have sometimes 25 kids in a space with four E&L teachers where you're really needing focused instruction. You know, if I were a parent of one of those children, I'd be upset by that. So, I think the reality check for me in listening to this is, here's what I don't want to have happen. I don't want us to be taking duct tape and fixing something that, in fact, in another 2 years, because we might have a blip in another population, or as we've seen our population and low-income population to grow, that needs change as well, meaning you have more specialists, you have more need for one-to-one time. I mean, this is always dynamic. And because we talked about this a few years ago, I feel like we're resurrecting a conversation that we walked away from because you said that still doesn't address this. And if what we're trying to do is address this for the future, then what is it that we need to do, which is when we went to this, you've got to build a building. And whether at the time it was junior high, now it's elementary, or it's looking at a mini space and doing a mini version of that, which I brought up at the facilities meeting, then that's it. But I'm concerned as a board member, we haven't been through this, multiple times, that we're going to be trying to squeeze space in. And that core space in all these rooms, that room, Hillside, Strangler, Churchill's before, Lincoln safety issues in the front, drop-off and all that, not going to change. We're just adding to the problem.
So what I want to be clear about, though, is if we go down that path and we say, let's build another building and we right-size our schools, we are indirectly saying we are going down a path where kids that are going to Ben Franklin may be going to a different school.
That's always been a part of the conversation.
Right.
Which is why I brought the early childhood center to the table, because that would minimize the disruption to boundaries. It creates other issues.
We need to be very upfront in this conversation.
And a good thing
when we build this school, and these conversations continue from tonight going forward, and we say we need to prepare ourselves with understanding and clarity that, okay, if we go build this other school, parents and families will possibly be in different schools.
Yeah, I mean, you grandfather in like we did before. You know, there's that tool, of course. But the reality is, if as we're saying, this, the right-sizing under roof, like those are ultimately the goals, the best way to do it is X, and if X is that phase two build a school,
Paul,
then that's a community commitment.
Right. I think we have to be careful about this term grandfathering, because I don't know how you grandfather a whole new building.
No, you don't. I'm talking about sections. So you have, in your, however was done before, where you keep a certain class. If you're a fifth grader, fourth grader, going to be fifth grader, you're not going to move to the new school. So there's a phase to it.
Right. But what we're saying then is, if we don't want to go down the path of blowing out the back of Churchill into the green space and building on the swampland.
Lincoln's going with the swampland.
Then we say we're not going to go down that path, and we're going to change where some kids go to school and where the streets.
Just to be clear, Paul did lead with us. I'm glad you're bookending.
We're taking an option off the table where now the only option is going to be family redistricting of some portions of the community.
Right. That's correct. One thing that's clear, and Erica, this is to your point, I mean, all the principals are up there giving us the classroom data and the specialty data. There's no flexibility.
No. You have a weird year, and you're, you know, and you know, it's questions like, is it okay that we have, you know, two out of our four buildings with staff that don't have a space to meet one to one to do work around? Is that okay? This is a rhetorical question, right? Is it okay that we have X number of kids in one room trying to do one-to-one time? Is it okay that in Forest Glen we'd be moving into their library space and taking over rooms for classrooms where they already have, Ben Franklin, and Forest Glen where it already is a small room? And their book collection is housed in a whole other space. I mean, we saw that in Forest Glen's, write-up that the principals did before. And so we talk about what are your constraints. We're already talking about constraints. They're already there. They've already been lived with for a decade or more. So the question is, how do we address that larger piece?
Well, you know, when you, I think you said something. You know, if I were a parent at Churchill, I mean, I'm a board member, and hearing this issue at Churchill, it seems to me the first thing. That if we were going to study this, it's how do we get that second addition on Churchill now to alleviate some of this crowding and not have to wait until the referendum and the other stuff, because maybe we can afford to do that. So,
but it,
I would throw that on as well as something that we should look at.
So if you were doing that, though, you would do the addition and leave the portables? Because doing the addition would just replace the portables. So the only way you would... The only solution, by you'd have to add space. You couldn't just replace space.
Well, you know my feeling on that. I mean, I might leave two portables and make that, you know, teacher staff room or something like that, just to alleviate this problem. If you know, I think the word was that we got 25 kids in a classroom with four teachers. I mean, that's not serving the population. We ought to just get that done and move forward. So, I mean, that's a little different conversation, but. It is part of addressing what we're talking about here, which is the facility spaces.
But it's not, in the sense, if the board moves forward, if the community says yes on some type of facility, you don't need those additional classrooms. I mean, this thing has been studied a number of times. We brought it forward last year. This is not the first time we've looked at these numbers and evaluated why did we need those four classrooms. They're very purposeful. They're purposeful today, and their purposeful long run. For the long range is that we're going to right-size schools, we're going to eliminate portables, and we're going to bring a facility to the district that would probably be the last major construction in this community for schools.
For 50 years.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the right time to step forward and make this commitment to the community. I will do exactly what the board asks me to do. If the board says go forth and look at how do we add more and more space to each of these buildings, I will do that for the board. It's not, I don't believe that will be my ultimate recommendation to you, but that is your choice, not my choice. And ultimately, it's the community's choice if they would support something like this. And I think for me, it's about bringing forward from the board a recommendation to look at one, two, or three scenarios. And then bring that to the community so the community can have an opportunity to weigh in on, do these make sense? Are we in the right area? I think we're hitting the right area with full-day kindergarten. I think that's what the community is saying. 647 people. It's not, you know, it's not the whole D41 community, obviously. But I think it's a strong number that's saying you should continue to look at this. The board has said... Right size, eliminate portable.
But to be fair to the conversation, Paul, it's the devil's always in the details, right? You know, I told my wife, you know, I like kindergarten puppies and babies, but you know, they all come.
You can have my
pops,
puppy.
You know, so you know,
we'll just give it up right now.
We have to look at, you know, if somebody asks me if I'm for all day kindergarten or whatever, and I'm somebody mm-hmm. going out a survey, you know, yeah, I want kids to go to kindergarten. Okay, do you realize what that's going to impact? So I totally agree with you. We can go down the direction of looking at all this, but when we engage our community more and say, okay, you wanted this kindergarten, and we want to facilitate kindergarten with facilities and right-sizing our schools, here are some ramifications to that conversation.
Absolutely. I think I have been so clear every time we've spoken about facilities. From the first time way back in July when I first got here, I spoke about boundaries. I spoke about if you're doing these things. I don't think we've ever once said that this is going to happen without a referendum, and this won't happen without some change to how we do these pieces. But I absolutely appreciate it, because you're right. We're going to have to be crystal clear. And then if the board says yes or no on one scenario, ultimately it's the community that has the final say.
So we got
each and every one of these pieces.
We got three options here, right? Phase two, which is already laid out for us.
We got K5.
Yeah, we got that's K5. We have an early childhood center, and then a reconfiguration and additional construction on existing facilities.
No, I'll pull that. If we already have the data.
Well, I would say we should look at that, but I don't see why we wouldn't. I mean, I could do all day. There's a house for sale next door, and Ben Franklin, we could buy that house and do full day kindergarten there. I mean, it'd be kind of fun. I mean, there's just
probably not what we're going to do. For that homeowner.
There was a house for sale next to Lincoln.
The
boom,
price just went up.
Well, in north of us in Addison, they're building an early childhood center. So they've gone through some of the same conversations we have. And we'll be opening that up and had some of the same conversation. How do you right size? How do you pull from your schools? And how do you de-stress your schools in terms of all we've been talking about tonight? So
so one of the things that I've pushed forward is you don't need to make a decision today. Next week, I think I need clear direction. Is it one scenario that I'm going to be looking at? Is it two scenarios?
$1 million, though, right?
I mean, you're not now.
Not now.
Well, next week we're voting.
I will give you...
Two weeks from now.
I will bring all of those pieces to the table. What is FGM? What would they charge us to do those pieces? You will have all that facts in front of you to make that decision. Is it one, two, or three scenarios you want me to ultimately bring back to you?
So do we want an early childhood scenario or not?
That's you're going to show us what the costs are.
Yeah.
And then we'll say yay or nay.
Okay. Do you want to engage FGM?
Right.
Or do you want to just look at the K5 center?
Okay. Thank you.
Does that sound fair?
Sounds fair to me.
Thank you.
All right. And I really do apologize. I've been a little distracted. I've got a personal thing going on, so I may have to step out, and I would ask Karen to take my seat here
would
in
you
a
like
little
us
bit.
To take a 5-minute recess? Or?
No, I'm... That's why I'm being a little distracted. My wife's keeping me updated. So
all right.
There may be a moment where I'm going
to
step out and
do
ask Karen to.
Do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
thank you. All right, guys. 2014 proposed property tax levy.
I think there is a recommendation on the table to take a quick
break. No, I got to listen to the tax levy.
We can take a 5-minute break.
Yeah.
All
right. Yeah.
Oh, I get to do this?
Yeah.
5-minute break. We'll be back
yeah,
at 10:18.
That will help.
All right, 10:18 p.m. We're going to restart the meeting after a 5-minute break. Dr. Gordon had to leave for a family emergency, so Karen is taking over his spot. And we are in the 2014 proposed property tax levy. Bob, please.
So this evening is the board's first opportunity to take a look at the projections and the tax levy for 2014. It had been before the Finance Committee 2 weeks ago and again this evening. So they've had an opportunity to study it for a couple of weeks. I've inserted this slide over the past couple of years really just as an explanation in terms of EAV, tax rates, levy, and so forth. And, you know, I frequently will get questions. Well, if my EAV is going down, why are my taxes going up? Why are the rates going up? Unfortunately, that's the way the system was set up back in the early 90s when PTEL first came on board. So basically what it says here is if your EAV is constant, then your tax rate will remain constant. If your EAV is declining, which is the way it's been the past 5 or 6 years now, it's going to force your tax rates up. And conversely, if your, which is the way the system is intended to work, if your EAV is going up, it's going to force your rate down. So that's the way the system was created. Unfortunately, I bet 20 years ago when this was anticipated, no one ever thought EAV would continuously decrease for a number of years. So I just inserted that briefly. About the only known that we know right now is that CPI for this year's levy is at 1.5%. We do not know what I've used in these assumptions here for this evening's presentation is an estimated EAV value and new construction. Both were given to me by the primarily Milton Township. The levy request that you have before you this evening is for a 3.52% increase. CPI rate history, I've tracked it back to 1991. You notice it fluctuates from year to year. I would say over this period of time, it averages about 2.5%. We've gone from a low of 0.1% back in 2008 to 2.7, 1.5. And here we are back in December of 2013. CPI was set for this year's levy at 1.5%. So over the years, we've tried to narrow the gap between the levy request and what we expect to actually receive. We go back to 2003, the administration or the board requested a 29% increase in the tax levy, and they ended up with a 9% increase. I came on board the district back in 2007, and every year we tried to narrow that gap. And this year we're projecting, we're requesting 3.52, and we're expecting about a 2.6% increase. Again, that's with the unknowns of new construction and what actual EAV is going to come out to. So you saw the spread, the differences in the spread. This is just expressed in terms of numerical. It's less than 1% increase between what I'm asking and what we expect to receive.
Bob, just for historical purposes, on the flag before in Midland 2 from 2012, that 0.39, that was the year that we had the abatement.
That was the year we abated.
Yeah, so I know there's like that weird blip where it's at that 11%, and that comes up all the time when we show these numbers, so I wanted to make sure people understood that. We abated $3 million. Yeah, and so then that next year you felt the abatement because it showed up in your numbers for the next year. So I just want you to know that that wasn't a year that we were asking for an inordinate amount of dollars. It was the impact of the abatement.
That's correct. That is correct. So this is a review of the new construction history over the past 10 years. You can see back here, back in 2002 through 2007, we were averaging almost $25 to $30 million a year in new construction. And that new construction really fueled a lot of our rapid growth in terms of revenues that we were able to access. Now it's come back. We've at $9.9 million, $13 million. It's been as low as $6.3 million. Last year it actually came in at $8.3. And this year we're expecting it, I was told by the Milton Township, use $12.5 million for D41. For this year. I'm going to tell you that they told me to use $10 or $12 million last year.
That's what I recall.
Yeah, and it only came in at $8.3 million. So what I do want to point out is that at this time of the year when we're doing levy projections and we're presenting this information to the board as well as to the public, we don't know where two key factors are going to land, and we don't find out really until that last week of March when I get the final numbers in. It's EAV and new construction. I don't know.
And that example is the 2013 new construction. Shows you the inaccuracy of this whole system. The fact that you have to, the tax rate's going to be the tax rate. It's determined without.
Correct.
You can just make a fast guess that it's going to be 2.6. Your risk is you don't request enough, because then you will be under what you're allowed to get.
That's
by
correct.
Making a low request. And that would be a disservice to the district. Now, you could be off just because the estimate you're getting from the township is off by $4 million.
Yeah, right around
$4
million.
$4 million. So, that's so when you get so narrow in your previous two you're actually to be too close and risking not getting enough to fulfill that budget.
That makes me nervous.
Right.
But
I think that's important. And that example shows it. You're getting estimates from the township now. He's not going to know those numbers ultimately until the spring.
That's correct.
And we have to do it by December 8th, by statute, or December.
In December.
Okay. Thanks.
But let me make sure I follow that. So, but you want 2.6.
If
you
had two, I'm requesting 3.52. I expect 2.6.
But if you got 2.6, would you be able to meet your obligations? Or do you need? Okay, you have to. But if you expect, so as a board member, if you're expecting 2.6, do I need to be concerned that that's not enough to meet your obligations? In other words,
but you don't have any control over it. All you have control over is one thing: what you request.
That's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking: can he live under? If he gets 2.6, what he's expecting, can he live and deliver what he needs to deliver? Or do we need to go out and, you know, go beg for money or borrow money or whatever so that he can deliver, or go into reserves or whatever? That's
yeah,
what
if
I read the, Bobby, correct me if I'm wrong, if I read the projected budget that we discussed in finance for something else, the revenue was about a 2.5 to almost 2.6% increase for 2015-16 budget, which this levy would imply.
That's correct.
We come in with 100 with contractual obligations and about a 1.5% increase in expenses. John, we've come in at $117,000 surplus.
Yeah. At the 2.6.
At 2.6.
Could you just tell me, given the law, how much more could we ask for if we chose to?
I could ask for 100%.
Oh, you could.
I could ask for.
Okay, because I thought I was reading 5% of the previous year.
Well, that is the value. You are allowed to have an increase. How shall I put this? According to truth in taxation, I can go out and ask for anything, but what I'm allowed to receive is 5% or CPI, whichever is less.
Okay.
I can, as you saw back in the early 2000s, they were requesting 30% more than what they actually anticipated receiving. Mm-hmm. The assessor sends me the levy. I make my request, and after that, it's really in the assessor's hands in terms of what the district actually receives.
So we can't get an advantage by asking for more at this point.
You can only be at a disadvantage if you don't ask for enough and those numbers come out where you actually get a number that's higher than what you request.
Are we comfortable or asking for enough? Then I guess that's
This is the direction that I was given.
Okay. I was going to say, this is, you know, part of where Bob is at, and I think last year's budget was even tighter than $117,000. You know, I want to say it was
when we started, it was around 50 or something.
Yeah. So the balance of requesting your levy, right, is to cover your contractual obligations needs, right, and also be good stewards of tax dollars so that we're not, kind of over-asking, essentially, right?
Okay.
So it's finding that balance. And then part of what Bob's been doing year on year these last 3, 4, 5 years is trying to thread the needle in terms of our budget needs. We know what we have in place and we have to spend. So we want to be fair. But PTEL always, that 5% always impacts it.
Yeah, but it's greater than that. I mean, because really, you're not in control. Your only control
is that you ask for less. We do the best, and we direct Bob to do, through Paul, the best that he can in terms of coming to that best budgeted area. And on our budget, total budget, to have $117,000 be the wiggle room, it's hard to thread that needle any closer
than
on the budget that we have.
But we're mixing apples and oranges in my world.
In what way?
In what way is that the 2.6 is what's driving the 117. Mm-hmm. But it's such a large unknown because you have two major unknowns.
You're right.
New construction and EAV. So you're at risk of not even meeting that if you ask. I mean, 3.52 could be a risky proposition. Mm-hmm.
What it becomes
window dressing. So if we ask for too much, people are going to say, that's what you asked for. What we asked for
That's
what
really
we get.
And what, no, what we get is determined.
Yes.
It's determined by the factors that he does. It's maximum 5% or CPI, and then the new construction, then the EAV. The only way that we determine what we get is not more, is if we ask for two less, lower.
I agree.
And then
we'll
get below.
I don't think Bob brings that to us. I mean, he really brings what, I mean, it's been an experience with you, what you feel like is going to be, you know, a fair
it's market. My best estimate.
It's the best estimate.
Right. I get caught up in...
I know the unknown. That's this whole thing we said is every year. It's all backwards.
No, that's not what I'm trying to communicate. To be clear, I'm saying that it's really window dressing. The unknowns are unknowns. They become knowns, and that's what you get.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. This is a backward process because we're required to do this in December by statute, but we don't get the knowns until spring.
And because we are, there's a large risk that we don't ask for enough, and that new construction number, if it was once again only $6 million, mm-hmm. what I'd like to see ultimately is the 3.52. Does it get us enough to have a surplus? Because you're going to be missing that extra $6.5 million.
And the difference between the 3.52 and the 2.6 is about $375,000.
Right.
So that doesn't seem like a huge risk.
In my shoes, it is.
Yeah, it's a big risk. Because you're really not, the new construction number.
So
it comes into play.
If we assume $12 million and new construction comes at 8, how much did we lose?
$75,000. Well, you stand a chance to lose. The calculations that I've done is for every $1 million in new construction, you get about $37,000 of additional revenue.
So you do that and you're below budget. If that new construction came in. The frightening thing in looking at this data is last year's new construction numbers came in much lower than what was estimated to you.
My biggest concern would be if new construction came in substantially higher than what these projections show. If they came in at $18 million or $20 million versus the $12.5 that are baked into these calculations. Then I would not have requested enough.
And what's the estimate you have at this point? Was $12 million?
$12,500,000.
And that's based on
the
conversations that you've had with the two assessors.
The township assessors, correct.
And previous history of what they tell you and where they're at, looks like they missed last year by a big amount. But
they missed by $4 million.
Yeah, but traditionally, have they been pretty close?
They were close out here,
mm-hmm.
but it's become very spotty.
Lately?
Lately, the past 5 years, because I don't think they have a real good handle in terms of what's actually happening out there. What property is coming online at what point in a year?
Is there any other way to get that data?
I call these gentlemen,
I know,
speak to them individually. I've told you that story every year. And I think that they're just providing me with their best estimates. And they would probably encourage me to ask for a little bit more than a little bit less.
Well, did the finance committee make a decision on what this percent ought to be? I'm sorry, I missed the finance.
Well, I presented it to the finance committee.
This is his recommendation.
So your recommendation is at this percent, right?
3.2.
From finance.
And what I'm trying to explain is that this is really window dressing.
Okay.
And what we're doing is saying to the community, we're not going to go out and request a lot. Because Bob's trying to really narrow this down for you. But at the end of the day, so everyone here understands, the risk is that we don't ask for enough and you end up under the 2.6 because of the EAV and the new construction. So by doing what one would say is the window dressing to show, hey, we're not asking for a lot of money, if we ask for 100%, it wouldn't matter. You're still constrained by the three factors.
Right.
So it would still end up at the 2.6.
So
in essence, all this whole exercise, this is, you know, for a numbers person, it's a little, you know, all you're doing is limiting your risk. If all you want to do is limit your risk, because really what you need is 2.6, just ask for everything. Because you're limited. The law limits you to 2.6. So then, John brought this up last tax year, and we wanted to fine tune it so we're not over asking. So the window dressing was there. And to me, from a numbers person, a budget guy, I just say, it doesn't matter. We know, ask for enough. Ask for 10%.
Well,
because
you're
not going to get it.
I guess
you're limited by the law, by the EAV, the new construction, and the difference, the higher of 5% in CPI. And Bob's estimates on what he's received is going to be 2.6.
Yeah, I guess I would say, though, on this window dressing comment that, you know, part of Bob's administration and previous finance committees was to manage that, because as we've said, everything we do is a communication. So not everybody fully understands how this thing works.
And that's
so when they see, oh, you're asking for 20%, that's not the communication, I think, that we're...
No, but what's important for the board members to understand here, that's what we're doing. That we're not all caught up, and why is it not... Understand why you're at 3.52. Because we're trying to shrink it so that we're sending a message that we're not asking for 20%. Because at the end of the day, we don't control that.
Right.
It's that as long as if we feel, this is where it shifts, if the board feels, hey, we don't want a tax increase, then we ask for less than 2.6.
Which is an option.
Which is an option. And that's really what we're discussing here at the end of the day, because really it's what the actual numbers are that matters, not this pregame, what I'm calling window dressing.
I
think that's the important thing for everybody to understand.
I think maybe to turn it a different direction, though, is that outside the levy conversation, that 3.25 could be considered a ceiling in terms of if we talk into 2015, 2016 budgeting numbers.
Yes.
We can't go over 3.25 as revenue if we want to.
Is it 3.25 or 3.5?
I think it's 3.52. And when we're looking at the 2015-16 budget, don't try to budget 6% of revenue, because you're not going to get that, because you already set the ceiling.
Yeah.
At 3.5. So,
well,
totally get your point. Totally understand. I'm just saying, yeah, maybe there's some minuscule of, you know, educational value to it, but it's... I totally get your point.
Whenever you're doing a tax levy for the first time as a board member,
yeah,
it's very confusing. So it's confusing when you're sitting in the audience. Just to be clear, the projections are based on 2.6, because that's what Bob believes are going to be based on the numbers he has. We can end up below that if we don't request enough. If we believe we want 2.6 as a board, then we should make sure we have enough cushion. Finance Committee believes with Bob's recommendation that the 3.52 gives us the correct amount of cushion, and yet we're sending a message to the community that we're doing our due diligence and we're not just asking for everything.
When you say cushion, if I ask for 2.6, I'm going to get 2.6.
No, not. You could go below that based on the unknowns of the EAV and the new construction.
But you're limiting yourself to that 2.6.
So you might only end up, if those numbers are off based on the projections, you could end up at 1.0. You could end up at 2.4.
Because where you're putting your assumptions.
Because where you're putting your assumptions. And that's the, you know, it's the unknowns that cause this. And, you know, many states don't have this because they're not in the rares.
I would prefer that nothing get done until the springtime when all the known factors are available. But that's not the way the law operates in the state of Illinois.
No. Well, we're paying taxes in arrears too. Yes.
But Bob, the cushion, you know, is roughly the way I calculated it. What you're asking for is 36% above what you think you're going to be at. Am I reading that right?
That's the 0.92 more, which translates to 36%, is what he's saying, I think.
And you think you're comfortable with that differential of cushion?
I don't want to shrink it anymore.
No. I'm just saying, are you comfortable that that's enough cushion in case new construction 20 million?
Everything being what I know as of today, I'm comfortable with this recommendation.
Okay.
So what is the total levy look like then? The request is for $45.6 million. Here is, this chart shows the decline, and then when the EAV decreases, it shows the growth in tax rates over the past number of years of fluctuations in the tax rate. and I have the bond and interest rate, what we call the operating rate, and then the total rate. And here is my levy request, $37.2 million in the Ed Fund, $3.2 million in O&M, and so forth. Again, matches up to the $45.6 million in terms of the request.
There's no life safety fund?
No, we don't levy into life safety. And if you remember, 5, 6, 7 years ago, we were down to really levying in what they call the general fund. So we split those back out about 6 or 7 years ago. So we do levy in working cash and tort immunity very minimally. It doesn't have an impact on the overall levy because I still have to come in at that 2.6% threshold. So what's up next? We're going to post the proposed tax increase in the Liberty Suburban Chicago newspaper that's due to go out on November 25th. We're going to establish the date and time for the public hearing and a proposed property tax levy, which is set for December 8th at 7:15. And it'll also be on display here at CSO. Any questions?
Any questions?
Then I will be back to you in 2 weeks with
well, don't sit down.
Final action.
You're going to talk about the transfer of funds for the elementary school additions.
Okay. Let me get my information. So, you have before you a set of resolutions prepared by our attorneys. And, you know, this is a conversation that really has been taking place over the past year. We proposed approximately a budget of $14 million for the additions at the elementary schools. We borrowed $7 million from MB Financial, which is payable over X number of years. And now I've spent about, I remember bringing to you just last week or 2 weeks ago that we had spent about $3.5 million. We're now up to about $4.5 million. So it's time to start that transfer process. And what the resolution states is that we're going to transfer monies from the education fund into the O&M fund, and then from the O&M fund into capital projects. That's the only way to accomplish this transfer from the Ed fund into capital projects is through the O&M, and then the balance of the amount we're going to transfer from working cash into capital projects. And I am required to retain what we call a nickel on the in the working cash fund, which is about $600,000. That's why we're still projecting keeping that working cash. So it's $4.3 million coming from Ed through O&M into capital projects, and then the balance is going from working cash directly into capital projects.
Any questions? Thank you, Bob.
Okay.
Okay. Action items. Wait, this can't be action items. Okay. Sorry, what? Are there any items? We're going to go to the consent agenda here. Are there any items board members would like pulled from the consent agenda to be considered separately? Which involves human resources, personnel report, employment recommendations, internal transfers, resignations, dismissals, finance, facilities, and operations, school district payment order, October 22nd through November 4th, 2014. Other matters, approval of board meeting minutes, October 27th, 2014, regular meeting, October 27th, 2014, regular meeting, closed session. Hearing none, may I have a motion to approve the consent agenda? Motion and second. Thank you. Roll call.
Mr. Bochensky?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Kenmore?
Yes. Superintendent's recommendations, truth and taxation resolution. The administration is recommending that the board adopt the resolution of intent to levy entitled Truth in Taxation Action Resolution. We have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented.
Moved.
Second. Anybody?
Oh, sorry. Sorry,
that was second. I can't second. Otherwise, that'd be motion. Discussion? Roll call.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
Mrs. Wilkinson?
Yes.
Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Yes. Establish date and time for truth and taxation hearing. The administration is recommending board approval to establish December 8th as the date of the truth and taxation hearing on the 2014 proposed tax levy, property tax levy, sorry, and that notice for the hearing be published in the Liberty Suburban Chicago newspaper on November 27th. May I have a motion to approve the administration's recommendation as presented?
Motion.
Second.
Second.
Roll call. Oh, sorry, discussion?
None.
Roll call.
Mr. Buchanski?
Yes.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Mrs. Nelson?
Yes.
Do you want to give this?
Yes. Mr. Escalante?
Yes.
Mr. Kenwood?
Yes. Superintendent's report. Sitting in front of the superintendent. Here, please.
So the first one is the Rising Star improvement plans, and this replaces the old school improvement plans. Rising Star was mandated by the state to be used as the method for kind of participating through this process. I believe, Scott, you did a presentation on the Rising Star where the BLTs kind of respond to different indicators in that. So you received copies of each of the buildings, kind of synthesis of their school improvement plans through Rising Star from each of them, and you have those copies in front of you. Did you have any particular questions? That's really why the building principals have hung around this long, in case you had
questions.
Any questions for them?
Should have done this sooner. Sorry, guys. Any questions?
Not a question, but just an observation. I look back at the SIP plans were like this thick. And so I guess just from a board perspective in terms of synthesis, I love that these are all aligned. And so when you read through one, you're seeing all of the same process. I guess my only question would be, is in using this format, did you see any shift or any ease of use for your own teams in order to be better aligned to follow through on some of this? Because you have your indicators, but then you also talk about what the tasks are, who's responsible, that type of thing. Was it, you know, do you feel like this is going to be or is easier for staff to use too in order to follow through? I was curious.
I find that my building leadership team takes more ownership for the goals. And part of our building leadership, part of our BLT meetings that we have on a regular basis, we go back over the plan and record progress we've made towards each of those goals. So it is a very different process than we've used in the past. Yeah. And initially I was a little nervous about making the change, because it's really about best practices, and it's about evaluating your system as a whole, from leadership all the way down to the instruction that happens in the classroom. So you're becoming very vulnerable as a school, as a leader, as a teacher. We're all looking at that data and making decisions. I really have come to really like this process, and I think it has built capacity among our building leadership, and they've taken ownership of the data, ownership of their goals, and they're very great conversations. So I
agree. I mean, it does definitely shift it from a more, you know, in the past, we were kind of segmented by team, like, you know, the first grade team would take our overall building goals and kind of develop plans within their own, with their lens in terms of what they think would help to make an impact. But this causes, this new system causes us to, as a building leadership team, to take a look at the whole school.
Yeah.
As a system.
That was my sense, you know, I don't know, when I read them, it just felt a little bit different.
Yeah. And come back periodically, what progress are we making, and then that gets recorded into the system, and then, you know, you can reach a goal before the end of the school year, and then get started right away on and adding, okay, what's our next goal that we're working on? So it's not an annual thing, it's a monthly view.
I just think it's helpful from a board perspective, because when we look at the long-range plan, we're looking at those individual objectives. But these, I think, in this format, tie more easily, at least for me, as I'm reading it. So it was interesting, but well done.
Anyone else?
Yeah, and one of the objectives of this is candor.
guys seen that from the teachers and the staff, the kindergarten? Because we always, sometimes we hear things, how things are rolled out and how the staff is taking it in and how the teachers are taking it in. And are you getting candor from the team members from this? They're kind of honed in on that. And is it a true representation, would you think?
Well, you know what? It's because the team makes the decisions. There are like indicators we go through. There's a whole list of them. And as a team, we rate ourselves on it. And then the team creates the goal. It's not just and then the team presents them to the staff. It's not anything kind of top down any longer. Yeah. It's really so.
We have some great conversations around whether it's, are we really fully implementing this, yeah, or are we partially implementing this? And that's where I think you find that candor of conversation that comes, yeah, in of just really, let's really look at this and say, are we truly doing this as well as we say we are, or can we improve?
It's not just a checkbox that we're doing.
What's the frequency you need in discussing these goals? Is it monthly?
It's monthly, and then sometimes we have to have extra meetings, especially when we're preparing the plan.
Sure.
And then perhaps like part of the goal may be like data review meetings and stuff like that. So it's a minimum of once a month. Or some buildings choose to break it down into shorter meetings more frequently. So, you know,
it's supposed to be 2 hours a month. We some of us do it, and we do it in a 2 hour chunk in my building, but others do it, split it up that way. So, and there are those 26 indicators that we have to do every year. We have to look at those and continually go back and reassess those, and then we're still working our way through the other 80 or whatever number works up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you're talking about this because even just for the record, this is a really complex process. And Steve, I'm looking at you with Hadley with 1,200 students, you know, that many more teachers, you know, it's a double, triple effect in terms of being able to do this effectively. And it's, if you take your eye off the ball, then, you know, you're missing some of the, you know, the purpose of it. But I, you know, hopefully as people listen to the board meeting and they hear you speaking, this is really an intentional process. And it's that another layer of evaluation and assessment that people don't see. It's going on in the school among the teachers all the time, and it's really helping fine-tune some of, you know, what you're talking about. So it's an intuitive process, but it's also a ton of work for people too, in a good way, but it is a lot of work. It's time intensive and people intensive.
Yeah, no action's really required. No. It's just required, yep, to kind of present them to you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank See you later. Unless you want to hear about our community engagement sessions.
Oh no!
Never know.
No. Oh. Okay. Next is the community engagement session. Is this the December 3rd one, or is this?
Yeah, this is Paul. He had done a board report for us on this. So
this is everything, though. This is the whole.
This is his whole. Yeah.
The whole game plan.
Can I see it?
Sure.
So.
The whole game plan, including the.
I can speak to this.
Okay,
do you want
Erica?
Sure. Yeah. So this is Paul following up on the information item at the last board meeting. He submitted now a formal plan in the form of a board report, and so you will see everything here. It's also just informational items, so you have it all. The next piece that we are bringing forward in terms of community engagement is the town hall meeting. There'll be three this year. The first one is December 3rd, and he mentioned earlier he'll be talking about full day kindergarten. Then March 4th, the topic will to be determined. It will depend on what the topic is at the time. Again, May 27th, and so that's just the next piece. We also talked about the coffee and conversation event. So it would be really board hosted and focused. Mm-hmm. And so there is one scheduled on the books for November 29th. It's a Saturday. It will be in the morning, and most likely
is that the Saturday after Thanksgiving?
Yeah. It is. Okay. So Patrick and I will do just a brief. Patrick will do a brief board report on that, so that you hear.
It'll most likely be at Blackberry Market. I'm working on that now.
The town hall meetings. Those are at the Hadley.
At Hadley.
And what time of day is that?
Those are at 7.
It's in the evening.
It is in the evening. It's when it's double check what we landed on.
There was 630. Okay. So 7 on the D41 side.
That's okay.
It's at 6 o'clock.
6 o'clock.
So what's the date? 6 and 7. It's the first one is December 3rd at Hadley and the library media.
I think these are all on the events in progress, right, Maureen?
Yeah. Yeah, and I send out invitations.
Yeah, and it, and there's calendars. Yeah. Sure. Okay. Any other questions about that? Move on to the delegate for IASB's annual assembly. 22nd, 2014.
So Paul asked me just to take this. This is that annual role. I sat in for Patrick last year because he couldn't be at the meeting, but Patrick has agreed to be our delegate rep this year. Appreciate that. And so we just need to have him agree to that and then affirm him doing that. That's that Friday meeting, Saturday meeting. And the thing that he'll provide for us is what he did last year, which is this. Catherine, and say we get the resolutions in the mail, which we did already, and there are certain key ones that are being brought to the delegate meeting to be discussed and then voted on for action by the IASB delegates. And so what Patrick did for us in the template that we had devised was to identify what the key issues are and what the IASB is recommending, the delegate team is recommending in terms of their vote, yes or no. And then he goes in and makes a recommendation for us based on what we've talked about, what our conversations have been around issues surrounding those, and then that delivers it to us. So with the conference coming, the conference being before our next board meeting, probably that should go through Paul to get to the rest of us in the next, you know, any time before, you know, just so we get an assessment done.
All right, terrific.
So thank you.
Any questions? Okay, board reports. Anybody want
to? Yeah, I have a couple, share. Couple things to report on. I'll try to be brief. First off, the policy committee met October 31st. I'll just summarize for you what we covered. We're recommending a number of changes to policies in Section 70, and we'll bring those to the board. November 24th.
What is that section?
Section 7180, Section 72.
No, what is it about? What is the?
7180 is prevention and response to bullying, intimidation, and harassment. Section 250 is student support services. And then the third one is in Section 4, and it's not really a policy change, but it's just a direction to staff on including exhibits regarding privacy of Social Security members. Okay. So there'll be explicit information about that for the board to review for the next meeting. Our next policy committee meeting is set for November 13th from 1 to 3 p.m. We expect to go through all of the recent recommendations that have come from IASB from the press service for May and August and October, if they're out by that meeting, I don't know. We set the next meeting after that for December 4th, and we will be finishing up the work on Section 900, use of technology, because we only address part of that this past summer with the internet questions. So there's more to work on that in terms of using electronic devices for district business. Then, we're starting a 5-year cycle of review of policies in January, and we determined that Section 6, which deals with instruction, is the most critical for us to look at, and it's extensive. We hope we'll get through all the portions of Section 6 by June. So that's the policy committee report.
Thank you.
Ongoing, I mean, I think that, you know, I speak for the for Paul and Dean as well, if there are policies that you think need attention right away, bring them to our attention. Okay, second thing I wanted to report is I went ahead and I completed the IASB bullying course or prevention of bullying course. And I recommend doing that. It's very helpful. There is quite a bit of material. I thought I would just summarize it very quickly. There are a number of things that are incumbent on the board that we have to include in a policy. and we'll be addressing that when we bring this revision to you on the 24th. I just think of two basic points that might be useful for everybody. An intention to bully is really not a deciding factor as to whether bullying has taken place. The bigger question, based on the things that have gone through the courts, has been the effect on the recipient. Mm-hmm. So even if someone really wasn't intending to bully another person, if that person is getting the effects of it, then that is the deciding factor. Protected classes through all the disability, gender, equity, sexual orientation, age, disability, all of those really come into play in a much stronger way with bullying, because someone in a protected class could come back to the district and say that they lost their rights under their protected class in some kind of act of bullying. So those things are being addressed in the recommendations from ISB and the policy, and I think, you know, we're well on track to revise our policy and get it to where it's supposed to be. And if you have the time to take the class, I recommend it, because I think it's helpful to get a little bit more of the legal background. The other two quick things I wanted to say is we've had a lot of conversations with all staff with people at COD, and they've moved forward, and thanks, Lori, for working on this, to allow COD students to complete their practical hours of 15 hours of observation in some District 41 classrooms, which I think is exciting. And then the last thing is the correspondence is underway with junior high teachers in our teacher city in France, and someone here at Hadley, and I don't know who that is yet, but the information has gone both ways at least once, so hopefully something will materialize from that in the next couple of weeks. That's great.
Terrific. Patrick, Amy?
Well, we can speak to the conversation, copy, conversation, whatever. The first one, Eric and I met, and then we had a follow-up with Erica on the structure of this quite quickly, and what we're trying to do is make this an open forum. We're not going in with any agendas. We're not going in with any speaking, set times at the beginning, like, say, 10, 15 minutes. We're going to speak to the communities and live there. We're just going to open it up and just kind of freeform. We're going to allow community members to approach the D41 table or stand that we're going to have up. We're still squaring that away. We're not going to retard any type of conversations or topics because you just don't know what any community member wants to talk about. At the same time as we have in those conversations, we also want to try to gauge those community members that may not be fully aware of everything that's going on the board, like kindergarten and facilities and other topics that were PDLs and everything that we're talking about. Are they aware of them? What are their thoughts? What are their concerns? So freeform, listening to the community. We definitely want to have it in a place that we're calling them walk-bys, where people will say, hey, what's that over there? We plan on having a laptop or presentation material that's going to show D41, some programs that we have, just like anybody who's been at forums or conferences. They have stands or something set up that people can see and view, so we want to make sure that we have a catch an eye grabber, so people will walk over and talk to Eric and I this first opportunity to ask those questions. Again, free form, no agenda in terms of what we're trying to get across, but more an educational and feedback forum. We've asked Erica to help us with our Chamber of Commerce. It looks like Blackberry Market's going to be our first place that we're going to do this. Time, either, you know, 90 minutes, 60 minutes, you know, and then we'll come back to the board and feedback on how it went and how it can be structured differently. And definitely want to make sure that we're going to attend, you know, two board members only time. We don't want to have any type of conflicting or appearance of conflicting of open meetings or anything like that. So we respectfully ask that board members that aren't
honor the delegates for those meetings to not attend the coffee conversations with
Yeah, we went back and forth on this because we talked about this at the last board meeting. And then, so we kind of played a scenario out in our heads with Erica, and it was, you know, what if, you know, Patrick and I are the delegates and Catherine shows up, and then someone turns to Catherine and says, well, Catherine, you're a board member. What do you think about? And in that setting, because it's not a public meeting, she would awkwardly have to say, I can't answer that. And so we don't want also to put other board members in that position. Or have people walk away and say, well, she couldn't talk, which was not the intention at all. So we feel like it's a more realistic approach to have us rotate so we all have opportunities and can schedule it at our convenience. And so Catherine and I will do this first one on the 29th and just be true to our, you know, true to the Open Meetings Act, but also not create awkward states for the rest of us in terms of not being able to respond. So it's just that's the law. We have to live with it. But we'll come back. And
we also want to have the opportunity either, we haven't figured it out yet, but I know it's coming to crunch time, either it's going to be a laptop where community members can leave questions or emails, or it's a tear-off sheet where they can leave questions to further.
Yeah, and sign them up. This is my big thing, you know, like have a loop going so you can sign up for e-news, sign up for district digest, you know, have that information so, you know, when information comes out, it's more... It's a push out, so we want to encourage a lot of that too for community members that may not be on our survey.
So, did you guys discuss? I mean, what's the negative of just posting it, and then any board member can go? What's the? I mean, there's legally we could just post this meeting, and just any board member can go and listen.
Well, I think I think we want to kind of steer away from the structure of a board meeting and the structure of. Set agendas and a structure. All, you know, unfortunately, having that structure of having an open board meeting. Let's just allow, you know, the free form commentary by members of the public. So we're not inadvertently stepping over any boundaries and lines of. You know.
So this the structure. If I post a meeting, what's the structure? Do I have to have a pledge of allegiance?
Do you have an agenda? Is that the question?
You know, the
agenda is a 90-minute open forum. I mean, that's the agenda.
Can I say something?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Keeper of the truth on this.
If I could. So that would be considered a special meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a special meeting, you have to describe what you can't deviate from whatever your agenda is.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into a meeting not knowing what an agenda is or having someone bring up an item that wasn't on the agenda, you're violating
my agenda.
It's a special meeting. You have to be very specific. If you go into closed sessions, it has to be on the agenda. If you talk about six things, it has to be on the agenda. So that would be based on what you wanted to do, that would be difficult.
That's unfortunate because the objective was really, you know, community engagement and having board members being able to engage, and now we're saying it'll be.
Why we're saying the two board members need to be true representatives and delegates as board, and you know we're speaking as individuals, and we'll try to convey. Board conversations. We can never speak as a board. We can speak, you know, as board members. But at the same time, turn back and reflect. You know, either through these updates. This is what we heard last Saturday. And this is a sentiment we got. And, you know, did we even consider this topic because mm-hmm. of the six people that showed up? Five of them asked about, you know. Something like fire extinguishers. Yeah, why aren't there insides? So.
I mean, I think it's we've talked this kind of back and forth different ways. Patrick and I met last Thursday for a couple hours, and we came and sat with Erica and kind of vetted that with her and kind of talked about pros and cons and all that. And certainly, you know, we could. We can't because we're prescribed. I mean, the whole goal of this is to have a free form. That's the goal. And if there's more than two of us there, by law, we have to then turn this into a special meeting. And so it creates those barriers to what the intention of it, of what we're trying to do. So.
Okay. Well, I think it'd be
good. There'll be opportunities for you and somebody else to then do the next one.
I mean, that's fine. I probably just want to get a something from Todd that see if there's a way to do it where any board member could at least, you know, go in and listen in. So we can just follow up with that.
Sure. We have that. We can do that through Paul and his updates.
And do you say in this summary what cabinet member? Are you going to have Paul there or cabinet members?
No, we prefer not to have Paul there. We prefer, so this is a board one-on-one.
And Erica's not going to
Erica may go as more of a scribe and to help us, with some of the marketing stuff and all of that. But
I think that'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
So I would
we don't want Paul there as a representative of the administration. This is a board member community engagement.
And if you need to follow up and get back and need a resource, we'll have some folders available with some of our some of the material on kind of key areas. And if folks want to take one, they can take one. If not, they can email or whatever it might be. So.
Thanks.
Yeah, but John, I'll follow up.
Yeah. Okay.
Might be the finance committee.
Any other? Oh, I'm sorry, Drew. Finance committee.
Finance. Three of the things you talked about. Two of them we've also talked on the board level. One was the levy discussion, and the other one is the dates and times for the proof in taxation hearing. Both those items were also discussed at the board level. The other item is a supplemental pay recommendation that will come to the board for the next meeting.
Okay. Joe, you want to add anything there?
Nope. I think Drew covered it very well.
Anything else for you, Joe?
Nope.
Okay. Eric?
I have no board report.
Okay.
That was
terrific. All right. Upcoming meetings, November 24th, 2014, public hearing on the Interfund Transfer, 7:15 p.m. Central Services. November 24th, 2014, regular meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services Office. December 8th, 2014, public hearing on the 2014 proposed tax levy, 7:15 p.m. Central Services. December 8th, 2014, regular board meeting, 7:30 p.m. Central Services. Other matters, are there any other matters to be considered or that you guys would like to bring up?
I have three quick things. The first one is, this coming Thursday night, I sat on a study for the League of Women Voters on charter schools, and so it's been very interesting discussion. My fellow study members from the League either have legal background, former attorneys, or have been teachers in other districts or this district, so bring a lot of kind of interesting conversation. What I want to suggest is that the way the League runs their study, the Illinois League requested all leagues within Illinois to review the League's position from 2001 on charter schools. And so there's been a lot of change since then, so they wanted the different leagues to weigh in on nine consensus questions. So the way the League works, and the League is open to women and men in terms of joining, is that this coming Thursday night at 7:30 in the Civic Center, there will be a meeting that presents our information. So it's just data around the position that was adopted, what our charter schools, how they established, the purpose, et cetera, et cetera. And then questions will be taken. Saturday morning at 8:30, then League members will come to that meeting. And it's still open to the public, but non-League members cannot discuss, because it's all League members then coming to consensus about the position or not, and then sending that information back to the state League. But what I want to offer is, if you have any time on Thursday night, even just for part of it, you'll get a handout of the slide deck that we put together, and just background on charter schools, which is pretty interesting information. So FYI on that. The other thing is, because we're not going to see each other before the conference, in the last email that came out from IASB from our legislative report, this year they're doing a focus on legislative issues, which are really important right now. And so on Friday, starting at 1:30, there's one about the 2014 election with great speakers, former Governor Jim Edgar, Jim Nowlin from the Illinois Ethics Commission, and this professor, Dick Simpson, that I heard last year from the University of Illinois about the changes, not just in the state, but federal as well. The Delegate Assembly that Patrick will be at. And then legislative issues impacting the school district on Saturday. And then a morning Saturday afternoon, prevailing wage issues, which you know we look at periodically as well. And then funding schools, who pays, who receives, what's fairness. And so again, back to that topic on Senate Bill 16. So we didn't have these last year, and so it might be interesting to divide and conquer. So if we go back and look at this, decide who might want to go to what, and then we can bring it back. And that was the last email from Ben Schwann from the IASB. Last thing is I want to congratulate our board president, John Kenwood, because in the last e-news from the Village of Glen Ellen, there was this information from the Civic Betterment Committee that candidates who will be presented at the town meeting by the Civic Betterment Nominating Committee are as follows: Carol Fontana, John Kenwood, Pete Ladisic, and Mark Senek. And Mark Senek actually ran for board position a couple of election cycles ago, so he's still involved, which is great. And John, so congratulations, John.
Okay, and any other matters? All right. During the closed session at this time, there are no items scheduled for closed session, so we will not be having closed session. We will be adjourning this evening a little earlier with no closed session. We have a motion to adjourn the November 10th Board of Education regular meeting.
Motion.
Second, please.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Can't hear you guys. Come on, all in favor.
Aye.
Did we do that right, Maureen?
You did.
No violations. Okay, thank you. Everybody have a nice evening. Thank you for sticking with us.